Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. My Boxing Fans official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. And we're back. It's Thursday, 5 o'clock here in California, southern or northern. Doesn't matter what part of California you're at. But it's 5 o'clock. If you're over there in the New York State, then it's going to be 8 o'clock. Anyways, we got a lot of boxing to talk about. A lot of fights coming up this Friday and Saturday. So let's move along with the show and start talking some boxing here. If you want to call in to talk about any particular fight, at this moment, it's happening this weekend, you can give us a call at 347-215-7598. Again, 347-215-7598. Let me put in my co-host, Gable. Gable, what's going on, brother? How's everything going?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm just chilling, kind of finishing up some writing stuff, kind of preparing my story for on Sebastian's Zubic that's coming out tomorrow. Coming out Saturday morning. So I've been watching some fights of his, and boy, that man does not like to fight on the inside, I have to say.
No, he doesn't. Actually, I've been watching a few tape on him as well, and that I did notice that. And, you know, the thing with going in with Julio Cesar Chavez, who's, you know, promising to be the first Mexican to win a title at 160, which he's going at a fringe title there. He's not going to the legit title holder, which would be King Sergio Martinez. But if you want to get in the mix, you got to be an overall kind of guy. Because, you know, even though Julio Cesar Chavez has been trained to be known as a lazy kind of guy, doesn't really do a whole lot to get himself – I don't know if he doesn't do a whole lot to get himself prepared for there, but mentally – well, I don't know. You know what? Let me take that back here, Gabe. Mentally and physically, it looks like he's just kind of in it for the ride on the name itself. His father being the great Julio, El Gran Campeón, Julio Cesar Chavez – Senior, who, you know, Mexico just embraced and loved him to the fullest. But it just looks like to me Junior is going with emotions. And if you're going to be the opposite guy across from him in the ring, you're going to have a little bit more zest to your punches and zest to anything that you bring. I mean, you know, you're facing a guy, even though we're saying he's got the lazy trait and he's not that special, but you're facing a guy that does carry good power, is a big, big 160-pounder, and he's looking to get in the inside so he can land some heavy body shots and uppercuts that he does throw fairly well. He's got a good straight right hand, too. You know, and Sebastian, he's not going to be able to do a whole lot of success on the outside. I think he's going to have to train himself to get in that pocket and see where he stands, because eventually, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., his pressure is just going to do a whole lot, overwhelm him, and it's going to trap him later down in those mid-rounds. I don't know what you're thinking, but that's what I'm thinking. Mid-rounds, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez finally catches up to him and starts putting in the work, chopping away at the tree.
Yeah, I think that's really the key here is it was the one thing that really struck me when I saw Chavez Jr., was his size. He's just a big guy. He's got a really big frame. It was about two weeks or so out from the fight when I saw him, and he was still like 173 pounds, which isn't unusual, but that he can carry that and not look out of shape at all. I was like, wow, this guy is still growing. You know, at least physically, I don't think he's going to get much taller. You know, he's I think 24, and he's already like 6'1". I think he's pretty much done growing in that department. But in terms of man strength and all that stuff, he hasn't really even come into his own. But, you know, at the same time, it's like he's got all these technical flaws. You know, he squares up when he gets you on the ropes. I mean, he's just open for the uppercut because of it. You can outmaneuver him because of his poor footwork. He's got a decent jab when he uses it. He kind of seems to remember to use certain tools as the rounds go on. You know, granted, I just watched sparring, but, you know, I've watched tons of his fights. He does throw a lot of punches. But he has to kind of corral you in order to get that done. I think, you know, Zubic, when we asked him, you know, is it going to be knockout or a decision? One of the reporters asked him that, and he said, look, I got 10 knockouts. You know, nobody's going to believe me if I say I'm going to knock him out, you know. So I think that really the key for him is to play to his strength and to kind of move around and box and clinch whenever Chavez Jr. gets close to him. And we'll see if Chavez Jr. is able to push him back, rough him up, do anything on the inside when he attempts to clinch, because those are two things that Zibig likes to do, is box on the outside and clinch when he gets in close. You know, it's a very European style. It's kind of a points-based style. He doesn't shoot through the target. He kind of just meets it. And, you know,
this is the thing I like about Zibig here. You know, also, I mean, you got to say he's got pretty good, decent leg movement. He's you know, he does want to box on the outside. And here's a guy that's last. He's lasted the 12-round distance, you know. He's done it numerous times in his career because he's pretty much had to survive on that, only having 10 knockouts on his resume. And he's got a big guy, Julio Cesar Chavez, who's got 42 wins, 30 KOs, who's a big middleweight, and a guy that does need you to be there. But it just makes you sit there and think almost a kind of the scenario of Canelo, you know, right opponent, right time, and perfect timing to get this Mexican hopeful star a title shot and a title bout. What they do with it, I don't know. What do they do with it? You know, Canelo's having a fight coming up with Rhodes. It's not a very appealing fight, in my opinion. You know, Rhodes can do an upset, but you sit there and you go, there's other good opponents and actual real fights out there, but these guys are doing exactly what, you know, any marketing person would want them to do, which is go for the softer ones and go for the ones that are more guaranteed. Not everything's guaranteed in boxing, but the more guaranteed possibility of you gaining more power by obtaining a belt.
Well, I mean, in some ways, it's kind of a protection in a sense. I mean, you look at Canelo; he's got that belt now. He's kind of you know, the WBC can kind of make whatever fight they want for him and kind of protect him that way. Similar to how Andre Berto was. It was all these mismandatory guys that were brought up to fight Berto until finally they took a tough fight, you know, that they thought they could win, and now we'll get to that later in the show, Berto's comments. And with Chavez Jr., it's a way to legitimize him. It was kind of funny. I don't know if you read the article I did on Chavez Jr. earlier this week, but
As a matter of fact, I got a lot of people that actually even gave me personal calls and were like, "Hey, did you just read what Gable Montoya said?" And I said, "You know what? He didn't say anything different we haven't been saying on the show." And you know, frankly, I had to agree with you on a lot of your points about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Everybody that's calling in right now, just call on just for a second. We're going to patch everybody in that's calling into the show. You know, but really quick announcements. A lot of us have been emailing saying who's next going to be on the show. We didn't book anybody. I'm going to tell you why, because there's some things brewing up that we're trying to work on, and also seeing that there are some potential fights. A lot of us want to talk about Zab Judah versus Amir Khan, and a lot of us still want to talk about Timothy Bradley, who was on last week with Gary Shaw, and ask us our opinion about where does Bradley go from here. But before we get into any of that, let's go back to what Gable Montoya was going to tell us a little bit about Julio Cesar Chavez here.
You know, it's just I asked Bob, and I was really surprised that he said it. I said, "Well, what does this belt mean then?" You know, and he said, "I don't know what any of these belts really mean."
Well,
and,
okay, bro. You know what these belts mean.
And he just said, "You know, it was kind of interesting. It was a thing that I didn't really include in the article. It was like he had a whole other paragraph about how he handles the belts, and he basically said, you know, if the fighter wants to fight for it, then cool. You know, I don't pressure them to fight for a belt. So I think it's good that Manny fights for his WBO belt. But when the fighters decide that they do want to fight for a belt, Bob actually pays for the sanctioning fee. They don't take it out of the purse. Bob
Right.
takes care of it himself, and they work out some sort of deal. It's not 3%, you know, across the board. They kind of work out a separate fee because, you know, when a guy like Manny's making $20 million, you're not going to throw 3% of that out to a freaking belt, you know. It's probably going to be somewhere in the $50,000 to $100,000 range. But you know, with the belt, you know, I think we all know, we all follow the sport. We know that this isn't a real belt. You know, we know, even Zibik himself said, look, no one wants to win a belt on a table, you know, have them just kind of hand it to you and say, okay, you're now the champ. You want to win it in the ring. And I think he agrees, you know, that he's not the real champ, and that he won't be until he beats, you know, Sergio Martinez. Or, you know, the other flip side is that he does something with this belt. Say he wins it. He goes back to Europe, makes a fight with Sebastian Silvestre or Felix Sturm, gets himself two belts. You know, is he still the lineal champion? No. But, you know, at least he's kind of...
But he's doing something with it. At least he would try to do something with it. I think that's the most of a lot of fight fans' complaints are, is that you're seeing title holders hold on to it. They're doing exactly what they're called. They're holding on to a title, and they're not willing to sacrifice themselves to try to gain another title or be called the Lanier champion. I think that's where a lot of frustration comes into play with boxing heads like ourselves that look at this and go, okay, you got a title. Big freaking deal. Now you're put into the history books, and now you're going to have really these non-boxing fans, these guys that don't watch the sport religiously like ourselves here, they're now going to give us quotes like, well, he's the only guy that's ever done this. We've heard in the past, other fighters have this note. They're notable about things that really doesn't even matter in the sport. You know, really, really quick, you know, born and raised in San Jose, and I always try to support anybody that's from the Bay Area. So if Saturday night, in June 18th, if you're in the Sacramento area, West Sacramento, go check out the Fight Night. Okay, you're gonna it's actually hosted by two guys, and I think we got one of the guys on the cue board. So let me patch him in, and he could tell us a little bit more about that fight, really quick, Gabe.
Yeah.
Hello, James. You're on live right now. I'm leaving the ring, brother. What's on your mind?
How you doing, David? How you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm a first-time listener, bro, and I'm on point with everything you guys are saying. I originally was calling to talk about that Zab Judah and the Amir Khan fight, but you just gave me a wonderful plug. Fight Night was originally born and raised in San Jose.
There we
moved
go.
Moved out to Sacramento. We got a beautiful card coming up, 25 bouts that night at the Holy Cross Parish. We're trying to raise money, of course, for the gyms and everything to keep our youth of today in the gyms and off the streets. We got some wonderful pros that are helping us out. Myself, Mr. Juan Lascano. Juan Lascano is going to be helping us out. We got Henry Rodriguez coming out. We got Chino Zavala coming out. Tony the Tiger Lopez, Otis Griffin. We're passionate about this, you guys. We gotta keep these kids occupied. And if me as a youth in the east side of San Jose did not have boxing, I'd probably be another statistic. So we gotta help these kids follow their dreams.
You know, absolutely right. We do have to help out these kids. I think that's a lot of stuff that a lot of kids are missing. And they're, you know, either they're in the house playing video games or they're outside causing havoc. And coming from downtown San Jose, if we didn't have those boxing gyms, you know, I don't know where I'd be at. You know, that's how I fell in love with the sport of boxing in the first place. You know, it was my grandfather taking me down to the local boxing gym over there on Alum Rock. It's not there anymore, by James Lick. Right across from James Lick, I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do.
Pete's Bakery, the famous Pete's, you know. And let me ask you this. What's the run amount of money that somebody's got to pay at the front door at 3 p.m. On June 18th in West Sacramento to watch the fights?
Well, David, what we're doing is, because it's a family event, you know, we're only charging $15 at the door. Kids 8 and under are free. And if you get your pre-sale tickets, they're $12.
Okay.
You can get your pre-sale tickets at 916-410-2647. But even though you're paying that $12 or $15, we've got a lot of good sponsors, so we're going to have a bunch of goodies going out throughout the crowd, a bunch of autograph stuff, a bunch of raffles, and the main thing, some outstanding fights. We're having a great card. A lot of Northern California fighters have put on this card. Some good matchmaking going on.
Well, there you go, fight fans. If you have nothing better to do on June 18th, even if you do have something better to do, put it aside. Wait till next week. Go out to Sacramento at the Holy Cross Parish at 1321 Anna Street, West Sacramento. You can call in and get your tickets early at 916 916- 410-2647. We'll put it up on the website as well. If you guys miss, if I'm speaking too fast, for anybody out there, don't worry about it. We'll put it on the Leaving the Ring. We'll put it out there on Twitter and Facebook. Go out there and say what's up to James. Go out there and say what's up to the Hispanic Causing Panic, who I've interviewed twice, man. They're a really good dude. Hey, James, thank you very much, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold because we got another really good friend of ours that's waiting on hold right now that wants to talk some boxing with us.
Understood, David. I thank you so very much. I'll be on hold waiting for you.
All right, brother. Stay on hold. I'll get you right back
Thanks.
In. Let's see, hey, Gabe, really quick, let's patch in Jesse Vargas, who wants to stop by and say, what's up? What's up, brother? What's on your mind?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. I'm just calling in just to listen to Leaving in the Ring Radio. You know, I'm a fan of yours.
Hey, man, I appreciate you calling in, brother. What's going on? How's Vegas doing?
Well, pretty good. You know the Vegas life. Well, after my fight, after April 8th, we've just been, training. We're taking it easy. We don't have nothing set yet. Hopefully, we'll come back in late July. We're still working on it now, so I'll keep you guys posted as soon as I know anything.
So,
Jesse, I'm curious. Were you disappointed about the way the fight went? Him quitting on his stool.
I was. I mean, to tell you the truth, I came in with the mentality of with Vivian Harris when I fought him April 8th that I wanted to knock him out and I wanted to make a statement. I still feel that I made a statement with how my performance, showed out at the end of the night. But like I said, I did want to finish him. Unfortunately, I didn't get to. But, I mean, I think I proved to the fans that if he would have came out to the next round, he would have been out.
Yeah, I think it was pretty safe to assume he was on his way to go. I think he knew that and was like, I don't want to get knocked out again. I'm just gonna call it a night.
He was holding on to me so tight one time when I hit him with the right hand, and he was going to go down for sure, but somehow he just gripped me like grabbing a tree, didn't let me go. So, but I mean, I'm very happy that I had that fight versus Vivian Harris, because he got me, even though it was just one round, he taught me a lot. When you have someone hurt, you have to step back right away and look for other opportunities instead of staying there.
You had a rough fight before that with Christian Favela. Talk to us about that fight and what you learned in that. That guy's a classic, veteran journeyman. He's been in with everybody, and he seems to go the distance with everybody and give people trouble. How much of a learning experience was that fight for you?
And you looked really frustrated in that fight too, Jesse.
Yes, you're right. I mean, speaking of it, I was actually – that was, I think, one of the fights that I got more experience out of, and also – it showed me that, hey, you can't ever get cocky in the game of boxing, Not in your training or not in the fight. And unfortunately, that's the mistake I made. I got a little too overconfident. When I was training, I also was overconfident. I was like, oh, we didn't have an opponent here yet. So I just thought it was going to be someone at last minute, But which it was. We got him the day before, the day of the weigh-ins, I think.
And
it
was, just went through a few people.
It wasn't, we went to about three opponents. The weight was about 6 pounds heavier than I came into. So, and also, I mean, to tell you the truth, it was just that I got too overconfident. I just thought I was going to be put in with an opponent that was just going to pick up his check, but I didn't know that I was going to fight someone that had 10 fights in 1 year. So he stayed busy, and he was always in shape.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. I just was overconfident, and that's what after the fight, I wasn't happy with my performance, and I told Floyd Mayweather, my boss, I told him, hey, I want to come right back in, and that's when we went in with Vivian Harris, and I knew that I had to make a statement and show the real Jesse Vargas, and thankfully I did, and the fans, my fans liked it very much, so I'm happy that they're happy. I overcame that fight because I believe that I didn't look good. In that fight, just plain and simple. But, that's where the experience comes in. I think every young fighter has to go through certain fights to wake up and say, hey, I need to correct this. And, that's what makes a champion. So I'm thankful.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that it happened early in my career.
When you get a chance to go back and look at that fight, with Christian Favela, And then you see your performance and you see how your frustration, and like you said, it's a learning experience, you know, in the ring. You know, I think a lot of people forget that you're still a young guy and you're still working on your craft here. But does anything ever, like, make you tap you on the shoulder when you go, well, like you mentioned a little while ago, you talk to your boss, you know, Floyd Mayweather. Do you ever go and say, hey, listen, I wasn't happy with that performance, but now that I'm looking at it, I see what I did wrong. Is there a possibility I can go back and get mines again and make myself look better? Because a lot of fight fans, Jesse, thought that you lost that fight.
Oh, woman. That's what they think. I mean, I thought I won it. You know, I didn't think I'd get the best performance of that. I mean, I know how I fight, so I know the best performance that I could give, and that for sure wasn't one of them. Like I said, I mean, if... there really isn't no reason to, because, no doubt about it, I learned a lot from that fight. But, I just had a big win, thankfully, and I'm actually looking for bigger and better things. And I'm going to use that experience that I had in that fight in the future fights to come. And I think that will lead me to be a great world champion. And as you were speaking earlier about not just picking your opponents. Hopefully, once we get up there, you know, we fight anyone, whoever wants to come to the plate.
Absolutely. Is there any names right there, out there right now, that you are kind of zoning on and going, you know what, I like a piece of that guy, or you're working to get to?
Well, we were actually trying to make a fight with Zab Judah. Floyd was trying to make it happen. Unfortunately, he's taking the fight with Amir Khan. And, we'll see how this fight leads out. And from there, I'm willing to fight anyone in the top 10, and that's what Floyd is working on now, too.
Wow.
So I can't wait.
Wow. That's
you were ready for Zab already.
I know. I was going to say
that's
that.
A big step up, my friend. That's a big step up.
I'm very confident. I really am. The funny thing is, I mean, I'm not cocky, but I know what I could do, you know, and as
right.
I said, I'm a fast learner, and, you know, I want to be the best. So in order to be the best, you have to stay on point and pay attention to every mistake you make. So, and that's what I'm doing now. So, like I said, I'm feeling very confident to fight any of the guys in the top 10. And all I'm looking for is the opportunity, and Floyd is looking for it. So, I'm staying positive that it will happen soon.
Are you staying in the gym? I mean, you fought in, you know, early April. Do you just go right back to the gym with a short performance like that and just stay fresh and ready for the next fight?
Well, I always take about 2 weeks off, and, you know, just hang out, and then I'll come right back if I have a fight or even if I don't. I'd like to stay in the gym, you know, because right after a fight, you know, your body's also a little tired, so I think it's also good to give it about a week, 2 weeks of a break.
You want to end up flat or anything?
Yeah. So everyone will see me at the Floyd Mayweather gym just about every day.
Now, speaking of that, do we see Floyd at the Floyd Mayweather gym? Is he working out or staying in shape at that?
Well, he looks in shape, but no, he doesn't. He doesn't go in the Mayweather gym at all. Well, at least I don't see him there. You know, he goes from time to time, but he just goes to say hi to everyone and in and out, you know?
Yeah.
Who are some of the guys you're working with right now, Jesse? Who are some of the guys you are helping you out, you know, stay in shape and be prepared for your next opponent?
Well, Buzz Edwards, he's with me every day, you know, making sure I'm doing everything right. Even though we don't have a fight, like I said, we like to stay in shape, make sure we are learning different moves, you know, perfecting everything. And like I said, Buzz is always there taking care of me, Buzz Edwards.
So is that gym pretty active? I mean, do you get a lot of work, or do you guys have to go to other gyms sometimes to you know, get some more work or see different things that you haven't seen at your gym?
Oh yes, of course. Well, I don't leave my gym. I stay at my gym, but unfortunately, we bring people from other gyms here in Vegas. To spar with once we're getting ready for a fight. We bring about 3-4 different guys.
Let's go back.
Thankfully, we're lucky enough to bring them down.
Yeah. Let's go back really quick about Zab Judah here. You know, when your boss was trying to
Mutiny happened April 8th, right after I beat Vivian Harris. Zab Judah was there. Floyd Mayweather was there. And right after the fight, he says, hey, I want you to fight Zab Judah. I'm going to see what I could do. You know, and he was trying to work on it. And like I said, it didn't happen. It's not going to happen now, but hopefully later on in the future it will. The reason, Floyd told me, he was like, man, you'll knock him out. That's what Floyd told me. I'm going to put you in with Zab Judah. You'll beat him. You'll knock him out. That's exactly what he told me. And I'm actually very confident. I'm sharing the same idea as his.
You know, honestly, that's a very interesting fight. I mean, too bad that Zab's getting in with Amir Khan. And how are you doing at that weight at 147? Are you okay with it? Are you struggling to make it? Does it look like you're going to be moving up anytime or?
Right now, I feel good at 40. And
My bad.
I feel good at 40. You know, I can't say when I'll move up, but I think my next couple of fights will stay at 40.
Man, I can't wait to see who's your next opponent.
Yeah, I just have to take care of my diet. I do have to do that. That's one of the mistakes I did at the Favela fight. I wasn't really having a strict diet. And,
It's just kind of worrying about keeping down.
Now looking at the rest of the, Zab's a speedy guy. He's got better defense than he used to, and he's got good power. When you look at the rest of the division, though, it's kind of a winnable division. I mean, Maidana just went
right
the distance with an old guy, that nobody gave any chance to. Considering your companies are close with each other, with Golden Boy. And Mayweather Promotions, I'm curious, would you guys be looking at, say, like a Maidana, somebody like that? Would that be a fight that interests you?
Yes, I would. I mean, like I said, I would take anyone in the top 10.
That would be a good fight.
I sparred with Maidana when he was getting ready for Morales. I sparred him about, a week or two. And, we got some good work in. I remember when Floyd knew about it, like, man, I don't want you. He told me, man, you're probably going to fight him soon. You don't need to help him work. and it did too. But
right,
to say the truth, I didn't see anything too dangerous. I would, if the opportunity would come, I would love to take it.
I mean, the guy's been known to have some pretty
fight.
The guy's been known to have some pretty heavy hands, but when you were in there, did you feel the heaviness, and did he feel your heavy hands? Because you're known to be a very heavy hand.
He definitely felt my heavy hands, no doubt about it. And
how do you know that? How do you know that, Jesse? Did you drop him?
I don't want to say too much, but I looked at his legs when one punch landed, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, man.
And, you know, I wasn't, they didn't want me, they restricted me in a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
Because I was taking advantage, because that's the time that I was fighting for Vivian. The next day, he was going to fight Morales. So when he came down, I was like, it's perfect, you know, I'll get some work. But then later, after the first sparring, they told me, hey, we don't want you to hit his body, you know, only on top. And then after the second sparring, I said, hey, we don't want you to hit him with hooks. So they were restricting every day. They were restricting
what?
Me. So that just comes to show you that, you know, something was going down, you know.
So were you surprised about the performance he had with Eric Morales? I mean, like the rest of the world, how surprised we were and how Morales was able to outmaneuver him and land some certain shots. When you were watching it live, did you go like, yeah, I'm not that surprised. I mean, they were restricting me for a reason.
Well, to tell you the truth, he does have some power. He really does. He's not fast. He's not fast. So when you feel his strength, it's not like a snap. There's no shock into it. You know, it's just you just feel a heavy hand. You know, and I think that's what Morales got to see. You know, it wasn't nothing. I think the most dangerous punch is a shocking punch, you know, a quick punch in the heart. His is not, how do I put it in short words? He's just strong. You know, he doesn't have a snap into his punch. And to tell you the truth, I knew that Morales was going to give him a good fight because I think under pressure at times, he doesn't know what to do. And as you could tell, whenever Morales gave him pressure, he didn't know what to do. You know, the small amount of time he did it. And so it really didn't surprise me. I did think he was going to hurt him. Maidana was going to hurt Morales, but I guess Morales still had something left.
Were you surprised that Morales was able to hurt him? I mean, not even, it wasn't even once. I think it was twice or three times in a row.
Yes, I was definitely surprised. I thought he was just going to probably outbox him or try to outbox him or maybe pressure him at times, but never hurt him. I never thought that. I was surprised. And, I mean, I'm ever since I was a little kid, I was 8 years old. No, I was about, 15? I was a Morales fan. So even though I helped out my dad, which he's a nice guy, I mean, to tell you the truth, I was going for Morales. You know, he's one of my idols. So when I seen him hurt him, oh, man, everyone in the arena stood on their feet and was chanting Morales. It was pretty nice.
Now that you've had your chance to get a little taste of Madonna's power, do you go back to the boss and say, hey, listen, no Zab Judah, he's getting in the mix with Amir Khan, and even who's the winner of that fight is going to be, he's going to have the negotiating power to pick and choose whoever they want next. Do you go back and go, give me Madonna, let me go in there, two guys that have heavy hands, you know, I know what I can do with them, and let's make that fight that's more intriguing for the fans. That I think fans would love to see that fight. I know I would want to see that fight. What about you, Gabriel?
Yeah, that's all action right there.
That's an all action fight. I mean, Mandalay Bay is looking for fireworks. These two guys are definitely will put the fireworks out there to draw people too. I mean, I think it's a great matchup, and it'd be a great move for Floyd Mayweather to go, we need a star in under our banner. You know, he's not fighting a whole lot. Let's get Jesse Vargas in the mix. Get him out there. And this is one way of getting him out there. A guy that, you know, I've actually had fans even tell me he's the most feared guy at 140. And I'm like, really? Then why is everybody calling him out?
Yeah, you're right. Hey, I would love to fight my dad. You know, I hope I get the opportunity. Now, I can't really say much to Floyd because, I mean, he's the boss. I can't. I think he knows what he's doing.
Boss, he don't know. You tell him, Jesse. He said, hey, man, the guys in Lever Reek said, let's make this fight happen. I think that's the fight right now.
All right, I'm going to let him know. Well, I definitely say that I told Floyd I wanted to fight with anyone in the top 10. So I'm sure he's going to put me in the right position. He told me he's working on something nice now. So, you know, I'm staying positive and, you know, waiting for his word.
I hope that something nice is Madonna, you know?
Yeah. I hope so, too. I mean, like I said, anyone in the top 10, Madonna, whoever gives me the fight. I mean, like I said, I'm not too sure I hope he takes the fight if they offer it to him.
Right.
Because, like I said, they restricted me in a lot of things, and he knows that it's not going to be an easy fight with me. I'm young, I'm hungry, I'm strong, I'm fast. I could box, I could fight. And he's seen every style. He's seen that I could box and I could fight. So I'm willing to take
it. You think you'll put it in the contract that you're not allowed to hit him in the stomach or on top of the head?
Yeah, as long as they don't. As long as they don't see that. Yeah, as long as I can land my hook and my body shot.
Like, please don't hit him there. Only use your left hand.
It kind of reminds me of that movie with Steve Martin, The Jerk, when you're trying to win that prize, you can win everything from here, but not from here, everything that's not below here and everything above here, but you can hit just right here. That's perfect. That's the perfect spot there. Jesse, really quick, brother, who's your take? Who do you think is going to take this fight between Amir Khan and Zab Judah?
I think Khan could win by decision. I think also Zab has a big opportunity of winning, but by knockout. I'm going back to, I remember when he got knocked out by Prescott. And I think it's a big possibility that Zab could catch him with one of those nice left hands.
I think
it could go either way. It could go either way. I think either by knockout for Zab or unanimous decision by Amir Khan.
Yep, I actually like this fight. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's going to be an interesting fight, no doubt about it.
a lot more interesting what a lot of people are giving credit to right now, I got to say there. Hey, Jesse. Hey, brother. It's always a pleasure having you on, man. Thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay, brother?
All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I love it when guys just call in. And, you know, since we're a fan of Jesse Vargas, it was fun having him call in and tell us a little bit about Madonna. I mean, I like that. I think that fight should happen there, Gabe. I mean, you know, when you think about an exciting, two exciting guys, Jesse Vargas, even though, he just mentioned, it wasn't the greatest performance against Christian Favela, but I don't think everybody has great performances against that veteran fighter, you know, that road warrior, Christian Favela, who we've had on Leaving the Ring. You know, it's really difficult to fight a guy that is willing and just goes and fights everybody. And I think he's almost like that fighter where I think it's kind of like a mental thing where when you hear about that guy and you go, you know what, I'm going to fight him. I'm going to be the guy to make him look bad or hurt him. And then it just doesn't happen. You know what I'm talking about here, Gabe?
Well, yeah. And like you said, you know, they had gone through three or four different opponents leading into that fight.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a mental buildup and then a letdown with each guy, and you don't know if you're actually going to fight. You know, who knows? I mean, I'm just glad he was honest in his assessment about the fight and that he's like, look, I didn't look good. You know, it was a tough fight. He felt he won. And, you know, I always ask that of fighters when it's a close fight. It's like deep inside you, you know whether or not you came out on top or whether, you know, you got away with one. And, you know, for him, he feels like he won the fight. You know, the rest of us are outside the ring, and it's a very subjective sport where you're just kind of judging it, you know, by what you're seeing. You don't know, you know, if Christian's landing a punch on you, whether or not it hurts or not. Only the fighter knows if the guy got the best of him, you know, especially in a close fight like that, because it was tough. I think at ringside I had it a draw, as I recall, but I came away feeling like Favela had won the fight and that he'd done more damage. But it was a tough, close fight, and like you said, you know, better that it happens now, early in his career, where you can learn from it and
absolutely
you can kind of move on from that and grow from it. You know, it's better now than, you know, look at Zab Judah, you know, when he faces, you know, Costa Zu, and he gets knocked out. And he's had to live that fight down for the rest of his life. You know, even now guys are like, well, Khan's probably going to knock him out because look what Costa Zu did to him. And, geez, that fight was, you know, how long ago?
That was what, like 2001,
dude.
Yeah.
10 years ago.
But, you know, the thing about Jesse, this is the thing that I like about Jesse. His bad performance, absolutely, he agreed with this, and he gave us an assessment of what happened that night. But he's the kind of fighter that can give you a bad performance, but come back because he's got that appealing style. You know, he wants to come to fight. He has that Mexican mentality. He doesn't mind taking a few shots to land some of his own. And, you know, he's a guy that's exciting. So regardless of what you say about him, go, well, bad performance, but I guess what? You'll end up being happy on his next performance, and then his next performance. You know, him fighting Madonna, are you going to get a bad performance? Hell no. I think it's going to be a great performance between two guys that want to slug it out. You know, one guy has been on the world-class level at this moment. The other guy is itching to get on that world-class level. I would love to see that fight happen. Hopefully Golden Boy and Floyd Mayweather sit down and kind of, you know, bring that up and say, okay, what are we going to do with Jesse Vargas next? Like, this is what we should do with Jesse Vargas. Put him in with El Chino. Let's patch in some fight fans who still want to talk here about some boxing. Chris, you're live on right now on Leaving the Ring. You want to talk Amir Khan and Zab Judah. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, brother. How you doing?
All right. Yeah, just I definitely think in this fight, somebody's definitely going to get knocked out. I don't really see a decision here. And my main reason because of that, because they both have, you know, very fast hands. They're both athletic fighters who can could punch pretty good. And they both have questionable chins. But I think in this fight, I think Zab's a very live underdog because, you know, to me, I think Zab's losses have been to pretty much bullying-type fighters, you know, people who come forward and pressure him. And pretty much like Miguel Cotto did, Matisse, I get the fight to Matisse, even though Judah won. But basically, you know, I think Khan's going to get a little bit too over-aggressive because Khan's not the type of fighter who brings his punches back after he throws a punch. He kind of throws, like, a 1-2, and then he doesn't bring his gloves back. I think he could run into one of Zab's quick shots, mainly that left uppercut that Zab likes to throw. And I know I'm a big Zab fan, so I'm going to go with Zab in this fight, even though I know he's an underdog.
You know, I don't think you're going to be the only one that's going to be going with Zab Judah. And you're absolutely right. You know, two very athleticism guys, two quick guys. The thing about Zab, though, he tires out in those later rounds. He's going to have to reserve himself a little bit and allow Amir Khan do what he does best, which is move those hands. That's the one thing that kind of gets me a little concerned here is the hand movements of Amir Khan. He's a busy fighter. He has shown us that. But there's one thing that I don't like what he does. He is quick. But he likes to when he gets comfortable, he likes to come in forward and move those hands. That's what
right.
Zab can take advantage of with that sneaky, you know, left uppercut that he likes to throw. You know, what's in my book is one of the best comfortable and it's super lightning fast.
Yes.
And that's where I think that's where Zab has a very large chance of getting the win because for some reason, the Freddie Roach camps, the fighters in those camps, they just don't have no defense for it. You know, we saw it with Manny Pacquiao. We've seen it with, with Zab. I can't think of the other fighter that we just saw recently that was getting caught with uppercuts here. And if Zab is looking at this fight very carefully, he's going to see that. The thing, though, is that he's going to be taking a lot of shots just to land that uppercut.
Yeah, exactly right. I think, you know, when it comes to hand speed, as far as combination-wise, I'd have to give to Khan. So, I mean, Khan's probably going to be the busier fighter, but you're right. I think Zab's going to look at the time coming in. And I know Zab's going to get his opportunity. I just want to see how Khan takes his shot, you know, a blistering fast punch, which I know he's not going to see because Zab can time those punches pretty good. But you're right. It goes both ways. I mean, as far as the stamina-wise, I'll probably have to give it to Khan. And it seems like Zab has his lapses in fights or he just, like, gets tired out. But in this fight, he has the opportunity to, you know, get his shots in because, like you said, Khan throws punches. And it's like he overextends himself. He doesn't pull back after he throws a punch. His whole body's, like, coming forward with the punches. So, I mean, it's going to be a good explosive fight to me.
What do you think, Gabe?
I think, too, that, Zab is showing more patience in the way he fights. I mean, a lot of guys will kind of denigrate his last win over Mubuza, like, you know, who's Kaiser Mubuza or whatever. But it was a bigger, kind of rougher, tougher guy, almost like a Brady Prescott kind of guy. And, you know, just knocked out by that guy in less than a minute. Whereas Judah was able to kind of work in spots, stay right in front of him, make the guy miss, kind of lead him into a trap, which is what he did, you know, in the final moments of that fight. Brought him into the corner, slipped something, came back with the uppercut, and got the knockout. Zab has learned how to be a little more patient in his approach and kind of mete out his energy. And thus he kind of keeps his power a little bit later into the fights, doesn't get so tired. He did get rocked in that fight a couple times, and the thing that I really think is the key for him is being able to deal with the speed of Khan, being able to cut off the ring and not have to get into positions where he's out of position and vulnerable to counter shots. But the jab of Khan, which he doubles and triples and really kind of lives on for most of the fight, he'll kind of jab, get out of there. That's going to be really interesting, seeing how Zab is able to kind of cut off the ring, not take too much damage coming in, because he's going to have to be, I think, the aggressor in this fight. He's going to be the underdog. It's going to be up to him to kind of get to Khan, whereas I think Khan, if he stays on his feet and is able to kind of box and move, he's going to win the fight. You know, I think he's the favorite here. So it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm not making a pick just yet, but I'm leaning towards Zab. I just like where he's at right now. I like the things that he's doing, and I kind of am rolling with him a little bit with this fight. I like his power, and I like the way he's fighting right now. There's less offense, but I don't think that's a bad thing. That, and he's returning to a division that he's only lost once in, you know, to a big puncher in Costa-Zoo. Amir Khan is not a big puncher. You know, I don't care what anybody says. And maybe
right. He
was a bigger puncher because of Judah's chin. That's certainly true. You know, I mean, Carlos Baldomir wasn't a big puncher, but he was able to kind of sneak something in there and hurt Zab with it. Mabuza the same way. But for some reason, I just think that Zab right now is on a roll and his confidence is at an all-time high. And I really get the sense from talking to a lot of different people that it wasn't really Khan's camp that exactly wanted this fight, but that it was HBO that was really, saying, you know, this is the fight that, you know, if we can't get Bradley, then let's do this fight. And they really kind of pushed for it.
And you know what?
That's
actually a really good fight. That was actually a good move for HBO. You know, like we've said it before, they don't make the greatest moves in the world, but once in a while they get it out of the park pretty well. And I think this is one of them. You know, it's an interesting fight. Zab has a very well and likable name. A lot of fight fans know about him. Have they turned their backs on him? They have, but they always turn it right back to him and say, okay, we're giving you another shot. For some reason, Zab is almost a drug you can't walk away from, you know? You can't – you love to hate the guy, and then you love – I mean, then you hate to love the guy. He's just one of those kind of guys here. And you're right about being in the right position right now in his career. Seems like he's matured a lot more. Seems like he's settling down. But the one thing that he still hasn't seemed to shake off is kind of getting tired. He does get tired, you know, and that could be a lot of speed takes a lot of energy out of your body to use, you know. That's why you don't see a lot of fast guys with fast hands, you know, throw four, six punch combinations. They have to do it in spurts, you know. Not everybody's like Manny Pacquiao, just continuously going and stuff. That's what makes him a phenom. But Zab is not one of those guys. He has to do things in spurts, and that's where Amir Khan has got to pick apart. He's got to, you know, tax Zab for waiting, and really, Amir's got to be very, very relaxed and very comfortable in there. He can't become over the top like he did with Madonna. He's got to make sure that he has perfect ring generalship and circle Zab Judah. Allow Zab to throw punches and miss, tire him out, then go for the kill in those late rounds. You know, I would say, one thing that Amir can do well, but he doesn't do it a whole lot, when he did it with a Madonna, he dropped him with a body shot, but he never went back to that body. With Zab, he's going to have to do the same thing to slow down those hand speeds and those feet of Zab Judah. It's a great fight. I don't know who to pick just yet. I'm not sure if I'm leaning with Zab. I'm not sure I'm leaning with Amir just yet. But what I am sure of is that Madonna answered us back on Twitter telling us that Jesse Vargas is lying. I just, you know, I figured I'd give it a shot and hit him back and say, well, why don't you call us and tell us, you know, and see what's up. Again, whatever, you know, I'd like to see Jesse Vargas and Marcos El Chino Madonna get in the mix, and if this is one way we can spark up the flame, hey, so be it. Let us be the ones to spark up the flame. It won't be the first time that we cause trouble out there, Chris. Hey, Chris, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Thanks for calling in, okay?
All right. That's funny.
Okay.
They said that he's lying.
Yeah, he said he's lying and all that, but, you know, it's somebody typing for him, but I did throw the number. I figured, you know, I've never done that before, but just throw it out there and see if El Chino wants to call in. I heard that he's on vacation. Maybe we ruffled up his feathers just enough to call in after having Jesse Vargas, you know, come on to the show. It, you know, it wasn't planned, Madonna, if you're listening. It wasn't planned in her, you know, but, hey. Rightfully so. Jesse Vargas has got to eat, and he's got to make his way into the, you know, up the ladder to become a champion. So I don't think he was I don't think he was trash-talking. I think he was just making an assessment of what happened in that sparring session. You know, everybody has their takes of what happened, but Jesse doesn't strike me as the kind of guy that is just going to make something up, you know. It wasn't malicious when he was telling us his side of what was happening in, on that sparring session. You know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the same thing happened with Kirkland and Ishii Smith. You know, they both had different stories about a sparring session and how it went. And, you know, it's interesting. He just went, you know, free agent this week. Ludabella, I guess, released him from his contract because he wasn't getting any fights and he wanted to pursue other things. And now Ishii's looking to go to the UK. But it'd be interesting to see if Golden Boy picks him up. And, you know, put them in a fight with Kirkland down the line, although I think it's – I still haven't even heard back from that camp yet. I know him and Ann are still kind of working, getting him back in shape. I'm really curious to see exactly what goes on with that camp. But that's a fight that goes – you know, that I think should be exciting down the line.
I don't even think we're going to hear a whole lot right now from that camp just because, you know, Ann Wolf is getting back what they have lost for those past, 2.5 years. And I rightfully so. You know, I want to see Kirkland come back in full form. And there's a lot of regaining that he's lost ever since he got out of prison. You know, when you, it was like they let the cat out of the cage, and the cat started running around all over in the backyard, and then we saw what happened when the cat wasn't put back into the cage for a minute. You know, he ends up getting dropped 3 times, and it stopped the train. It stopped the gravy train for a moment. But now that you've got the right person to drive the train, let's see what happens. Let's see if there was really any significant damage to that, to James Kirtland. You know, I'm really excited to see what happens from there. I mean, you know, when you see a fighter get stopped, you know, I'm one of those kind of guys that when you see a guy that has no blemishes on their O, which is, it's great for the meanwhile, but eventually, after seeing that over and over and over again, you start saying, oh, well, shit, I mean, there's got to be something wrong here. What happens when he does get hurt? What happens when he gets dropped? Does he fold? Does he disappear? Does he come back stronger, tougher, meaner? Those are the guys, those are the champions that a lot of us fall in love with and stick around for the sport. You know, those are the guys that you say, man, that makes a legend. That's what a champion's about, you know. Not necessarily always staying with the undefeated record and or picking and choosing. It's those moments where you see a fighter that say, I'm not gonna pick and choose, I'm gonna go after. Some fighters don't have any choices but to fight whoever's put in front of them, like Glenn Johnson. You know, he doesn't have a choice. The Road Warrior having his way again at another title shot against Carl the Cobra Frotch this Saturday night. I like this fight a whole lot. I think this is a great matchup. I think that Glenn Johnson has a very strong possibility of upsetting Carl Frotch. Carl Frotch has just shown us some new boxing technique out of his arsenal. You know, he fought Mikel Kessler, wasn't successful, but he was competitive. Competitive in that fight. So competitive that a lot of people swayed his way believing that he won that fight. Then he, you know, gets in with Arthur Abraham, and he makes Arthur Abraham look like a sparring partner. Almost made him look like, maybe not even look, I think Arthur Abraham has sparring syndrome. You know, he's not going to get out of it. He just fights like a sparring guy, and that's about as much use as you're going to have with Arthur Abraham. We just saw him back a few weeks ago with Andre Ward and didn't see a whole lot come out of the kid. But now you got Carl Frotch facing the guy, Glenn Johnson, who should really, honestly, shouldn't even be in the mix anymore because of his age. But you're seeing age is not a thing. It's just a number. You know? You just don't use that phrase in a relationship. It's actually, it's just a number in boxing. That's, we're seeing this time and time and time and more. And Glenn Johnson coming into this tournament as a late guy because of Mikel Kessler walking out of it. Due to eye injury, who's also fighting on the undercard, but is a live underdog, was able to stop Alan Green, even though some fans feel that was behind the head, Alan Green himself and his manager, but he's a workhorse, and he does his basic boxing fairly well, does it very well, actually. Carl Frotch, not a whole lot of special effects about him, but he's a strong, strong 168. Glenn Johnson has shown us what he could do at 175. Now he's down at 168, which is a weight that a lot of us didn't think that he was going to do well because he looked drained going in to fight Alan Green. A lot more questions going in with Johnson, but I think Johnson likes it like that there, Gabe. What do you think?
You know, I just got an interesting email. Angulo wants to respond to the interview from last week, so we'll be setting that up and having him on.
Come on.
Anyways, we'll get to that later.
Pedro, Bigfoot.
You know, getting to Carl Frotch, you know, and Johnson, I think it's a tough fight, you know, for both guys. It's going to be who's able to impose their will, who's able to really impose their style more than anything. I think Johnson, you know, I don't know if you read Steve Kim's article this week on him, and I found it really interesting in that, you know, myself and other people, we're talking about how, you know, I think Steve and I were both in agreement, and I think you were too, that coming down to 168 is going to be a problem. You know,
right.
the guy's old, he hasn't been below 175 in years, like 8 years, 9 years. I thought it was going to be a strain, and it turned out that he really wasn't giving himself the right nutrition. And Steve's article goes all into what he's done to kind of change that. And then 168, he feels even better. He's added muscle. He's lost a lot of fat. And here he is, you know, he actually did better against Alan Green than Andre Ward did, who's a guy that's heading towards his physical prime. He was able to knock Green out. I think he's really live in this fight, you know, but it's going to come down to styles. And Froch, to me, more than anything, or Frock, however you say it, he's a guy that has really changed as the Super Six has gone along. He's adapted his style fight by fight. I think he's learned from his mistakes, particularly, you know, in the Durrell fight, where he wasn't able to really box or brawl the way he wanted to. He seemed kind of off balance the whole time, not physically, but just in terms of how to approach the fight. Now he's kind of gotten a clearer sense of who he really is. And I'm very curious to see if he's going to brawl in spots but box as a main overview, you know, a frame of how he wants to do the fight, or how he's really going to approach this. I know what Glenn Johnson's going to do. He's going to come forward behind that big shell. He's going to, you know, pull out his sword from behind it, dig to the body, come upstairs, and look to get Froch along the rope and into smaller quarters so he can do his damage for the long haul in the fight, kind of slow the faster guy, the younger guy down. I'm leaning towards Froch in this fight. I pretty much picked him earlier in this week, and as the week goes on, I'm not very comfortable making a pick in this fight just because I think it's anybody's fight to win. But me, Froch has shown more versatility, shown more ways to win at his disposal, whereas Glenn needs the other guy to cooperate a bit in order to be able to fight his fight. But still, you know, for a guy to be competing at the level that he's at, you know, has been competing at all this time, I think Glenn Johnson's incredibly live underdog. And it was funny, right as we started the show, I tweeted at Bernard Hopkins. I said, a fight that I would love to see is, because he's kind of looking for opponents. You know, they're negotiating with Chad Dawson, but there's some whispers that they're not crazy about that fight, that HBO is like, look, the guy wasn't exactly exciting, Chad Dawson. There'd be, you know, maybe other fights we could make. And so that fight may or may not happen. I would love to see Glenn Johnson versus Bernard Hopkins, part two.
Oh, yeah.
See it at a higher weight. Let's do this thing. And, you know, Bernard didn't directly answer when I said, you know, I assume that you like the fight. But he did retweet the initial question or the initial statement that I really like that fight. So I'm going to take that as a yes, he does actually like the fight. So we'll
you
see.
You know, we got to give Bernard Hopkins a call. I think I'll do that tomorrow. You know, since I don't have life here, I think I'll give him a call and see maybe he'll come on Thursday, as well as Glenn Johnson. You know, I was trying to get a hold of Glenn, but his phone was off, rightfully so. He's probably zoning out and being mentally prepared for his Saturday fight with Carl Froch. You know, the thing I like about these two fighters, and I think you said it just right there, Gabriel, was you got two guys that learned on the job. You know, Carl Froch showed a lot of amateur style when he had kind of came through, you know, kind of wild, you know, punches were wide, but he's now kind of found himself a little bit more and understood the science of the game. Glenn Johnson is one of those guys as well, you know. He's getting better and better, you know. He's starting to get more fine like wine. He's a guy that knows how to use his jab. He knows his capabilities with this jab. He doubles the jab, but he doesn't flick the jab. He thumps the jab. I like that about him. That's what creates a lot of openings, and that was what created an opening against Alan Green. You know, he was thumping that jab. He was doubling it up, and as soon as that, he would see Alan Green tried to get away from it, he would open up the right hand because he saw the legs were not balanced and they weren't planted so he could return with a counter shot. That gave the older guy, Glenn Johnson, the opportunity to land an onslaught and be successful at it. Carl Froch is the younger, fresher guy. He's a very strong 168. That's my big question. A big guy like Carl Froch, he's going to be fighting an older fighter, and I hear exactly what you say. He's going to have to corner him and then do his damage there. But to me, that cornering that type of a cobra that has that much venom in him, it's going to cost you a whole lot. And being going back down again at 168, which I say, being at that age and cutting that weight, still, to me, leaves the question is how much is it doing to your body? Alan Green didn't show much of a fight in himself facing Glenn Johnson. Carl Froch is a completely different animal. And that animal to me tells me that he's fresh enough and determined enough and stubborn enough to take on whatever Glenn Johnson decides to bring in that table. I still like Jen Johnson's odds in this fight here, but I think he could get dropped and hurt, seriously, with Carl Froch.
Well, possible. You know, just with his length, you know, Franch is kind of an awkward guy. You know, his ability to jab from the outside and move. That's what I mean. Like, he has more options at his disposal. He can, I think he can fight on the inside. He can fight a brawling kind of fight, although that completely benefits Glenn. I think he can stay on the outside, you know, keep Glenn kind of moving and chasing him around while walking him into shots. You know, it'd be easier said than done, but, you know, I think he has more of a chance to kind of keep that kind of fight going. Whereas Glenn, I don't know if he can keep it on the outside and win that kind of fight. The speed differential is pretty sizable, in my opinion. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be a really tough fight, and it's going to be the kind of fight that I think goes a lot of rounds. And I think it, you know, will be determined probably in the back end of the fight, the last four rounds. I think it'll be a really close kind of fight. And you know, when you look at the Tavares-Cloud fight and the fact that Glenn was hurt in that fight a couple times, and we'd never seen that before, and we all said, well, you know, it finally happened. He's finally gotten old. And then you read, you know, Steve's article about the kind of nutrition that he was doing before as opposed to the way he's approaching weight now. Maybe it speaks more to that because he was having trouble making weight at 175.
I think it was a combination of two, nutrition, diet, yep, and Cloud. You know, Cloud is a big guy, strong, hard hitter. See, that's the thing that we'll call Frotch, I think, as well. You know, Glenn Johnson – you know, we criticized Carl Froch in the past of his boxing style, you know, really throwing wide shots. His balance wasn't all there. But in my opinion, him trying to be technically sound against Glenn Johnson is not going to work for him. He needs to kind of be a little bit of a wild man because Glenn's a technically sound fighter. He's going to be using that jab. He's got to come around that jab. He's got to throw over that jab of Glenn Johnson to kind of get him off of his game and get Glenn Johnson off balance. You know, to me, I think it's all about Carl Froch just opening up and seeing if he hits a home run. You know, jump on him early, make the older fighter with the older legs work a little bit more at a faster pace that he's not used to, because Glenn likes to try to really take over the pace with this jab, you know. And when you go back and watch that Cloud fight, which was a very high-energy fight, I mean, the pace was phenomenal, even for an older guy. It still makes you think, can he do it again? Can he continuously do it? And especially not having that same amount of weight and backup in his, you know, fat on his muscle at 168. You know, I think Carl Froch needs to just jump on him and see if he can bring him up in that pace and see if he can last that pace. I don't think he can. I think Glenn will tire out a little faster. I think Glenn will be a little bit more frustrated, and he's going to be worried about trying to get back into his pace. An older fighter here always wants to be able to take control. You take that away from an older fighter, then you see exactly what they are, old.
Yeah, you know, he definitely could be. I mean, here's the thing. If you look against you look good against Alan Green, but that's Alan Green. You know, he's a very one-dimensional guy. If he can't get you out of there early, if he can't get his power going, you know, he's going to let you come in and work on the inside and get things done against you. Carl Froch is a completely different guy, and he, you know, is a guy that not a lot of us really picked to be in this position heading into the finals of the Super Six.
Oh, no.
I certainly didn't. I didn't think a lot of him. And then
I just thought he was exciting.
On,
that was the only thing,
yeah,
I thought. So I didn't really care whether or not he was going to be at this position where he's at in the tournament. But I really was like, you know, whoever this guy fights, it's just going to be exciting. Because Carl Froch is one of those kind of a throwback type of fighter. He doesn't really care. He's just going to go and he wants to knock everybody out. I like this mentality going into this tournament. But it's just, you know what, a tournament like this, I know it was criticized in the beginning. It's going to be too long, 2 years. And you're absolutely right. Showtime has seen the effects and the fall aparts, you know, out of this tournament, because so much can happen within a 20-month period of time. But it also gives us the chance to evolve with these fighters and watch them grow and really see things that we weren't seeing 2 years ago about them, you know. I think that's what makes this tournament so, in my opinion, so successful to a certain level.
Yeah, you know, I think it's, I mean, you know, it's weird. You know, the people have really complained about how long the Super Six has taken and all the weird twists and turns. But if you really look at, you know, look at all the other fights that don't happen outside of a tournament. Look at Conn Bradley. Look at, you know, Pacquiao Mayweather. The fights that just looked like they were going to happen. I mean, it was all but signed, and then they just didn't. Isn't that just kind of par for the course for boxing in general? You know, I think the Super Six has really brought us some fights that we may not have ever gotten. And they brought it to us in a fairly timely fashion. I mean, boxing fans are just so fickle. They want it all right now, and we want the best versus the best. Well, to me, the Super Six brought us that. It didn't bring us Butte in the mix, but, you know, I've said it this whole time. I think he's waiting on the outside. He's going to have a few fights on Showtime. And then I almost guarantee he's going to fight the winner of the Super Six, because what other fight makes more money for him? You know, what other fight makes more sense? So I think, you know, to me, if you look at all the other divisions, I mean, look at what HBO has tried to do with 140. You know, you've had Bradley Alexander. Now you're getting Conn Judah. You had Conn Maidana. If they had done it in a more formal sense, maybe they could have marketed it better to the general public. Maybe we would have gotten some of these fights guaranteed. And maybe we could have built towards, you know, Bradley versus Conn. Maybe that fight would have played out a little bit differently, that scenario, and that one of them would have gotten beaten along the way, heading towards each other. You know, it's, to me, I really think that when guys say, you know, this fight needs to marinate or needs to be built up, you look at the Super Six, and I think that's exactly what they mean. Because Andre Ward versus Butte, you know, I think fight fans that want Conn Bradley now would have been really happy with Butte versus Ward last year or a year and a half ago, when nobody really knew who Andre Ward was on an international level.
Absolutely.
Now people have at least more of a sense of who he is, and we all know who he is more now than ever as a fighter. Now that fight is actually a big fight, and it justifies the risk-reward factor that Butte is going to have to deal with in facing him. That's what they mean by marinate. And, you know, so I was arguing with somebody today about Bradley and Conn, and I said, what if they would have done what Tim wanted to do and what we all said they should do.
Right.
Why aren't we getting Bradley versus Maidana as a double bill with this fight? You know, do it together, do it on a pay-per-view. Makes a lot of sense. Have, you know, those guys fight each other. They'd be, I think, are better matchups than Conn Bradley is. And it's going to do, you know, pretty well on its own, I think, in Vegas. And maybe, I really think that Judah Conn should be on the East Coast, but that's a whole other argument. But you put those four fighters together on the same bill, you're going to get action fights, and then the winners of that fight each other. I mean, if you're building towards something and you're working towards something with an actual plan, isn't that always better than just kind of arbitrarily saying, well, these are the two best names, even though they don't really sell a lot of tickets, let's just put them together and hope that it sells really well, we'll market it well, you know? I don't really understand that. But, you know, I'm just a writer, I'm not a promoter, I'm not a fighter, but it makes sense to me, you know?
No, it makes a lot of sense, you know, and I think that's, even this fight here with Glenn Johnson and Carl Froch is a fight, really, I don't think that would have been made without the Super 6 tournament here, you know, because there's a lot at stake to fight a Glenn Johnson, the Road Warrior, you know, where Carl Froch has been having a great streak, and he can automatically go after an Andre Ward fight, but instead we're seeing him fight one of the best fighters out there, at 175 to 168, Glenn Johnson, who's an entertaining fighter, a guy that comes to fight, doesn't care about the who's and the hots about anything else except get in the ring and do his work. That's his office. And that's what we like. We like to see guys that do their faxing and stamping and computer work in the ring, not outside the ring, not tell us who they wish to fight later on, And this and that. But instead, we're going to get a great matchup here. I'm going to go with Carl Froch in this fight against Glenn Johnson. I hate to pick against Glenn Johnson. I really do, because he's one of my favorite fighters out there. But I'm looking at it as a realist. I'm looking at Carl Froch just, it's his time, I think, to shine. And he's got a great fight ahead of him with Glenn Johnson. Is Glenn going to give him the fight of his life? I think so. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight. I think you're going to see some scary moments for Carl Froch. I think the Cobra is going to become a garden snake at some moments in the rounds. And you're going to see why they call him the Road Warrior, Glenn Johnson. I think if you're not a fan of Glenn right now, and this is the first time you're hearing about the Road Warrior, Glenn Johnson, Jamaican-born, living in Florida, you're going to walk away going, man, where was this guy? And I'm going to tell you, well, it's because you weren't a real fight fan. I'm playing.
Actually,
I'm playing. Of course you're a fight fan.
Somebody actually,
I
actually had somebody say, you know, because I put up the tweet and I put the boxing hashtag, so a lot of boxing fans, even people that don't follow me, saw it. And one guy said, why would you want to see that fight? Glenn Johnson's a bum. F him.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Dude, you're not a boxing fan. I'm sorry. How can you not like Glenn Johnson? I mean, this guy has.
How could you call Glenn Johnson a bum? That's first off. I mean, you know that word.
I don't get that at all, dude. Yeah.
Bum.
I mean, I mean, if you see me fight in the gym, you could say that guy's a straight bum. But Glenn Johnson, I mean, come on, dude. I mean, the guy's been active for so long. You know, he's only been stopped once, and that was some cuts against, you know, an all-time great in Bernard Hopkins.
Hopkins,
and,
right.
And he's gone on to do great things. He was able to do what Bernard Hopkins wasn't able to do, and that's stop Roy Jones Jr. Even a very faded Roy Jones Jr., Hopkins wasn't able to stop. So, you know, to me, it's always about, you know, what have you done lately? And Glenn is every bit in the mix, I think, for a Bernard Hopkins fight. I don't think he needs to win the Super Six. I think he needs to look good losing. You know, and he can still get that fight. This is a guy that really defies record. You know, he doesn't need to be undefeated. That's not, you know, probably a lot of his losses could be called wins because he's a road warrior. It just makes a lot of sense to me. He's two old guys.
I mean, he's a,
you know,
he's a perfect example of what he's a perfect example of how overrated undefeated record could be. I mean, you know, fight fans automatically tend to believe that if you lose your O, you're no good. You know what I mean? And Glenn Johnson's just proven, look, you can lose it and lose it, but you still, if you stay active and you stay a factor in a conversation in among the boxing community, you're still going to be a factor in the ring. If you stay in the gym and you continuously work on your craft, you're still going to be a factor in the fight night. You know, that's the thing, that you have to look at the body of work that this man has done. So for somebody to go sit there and go, oh, he's a bum, well, all you're looking at are big names. And that's all you know is big names. You know,
yeah.
Linus on Twitter right now is tweeting the Leaving the Ring, Super Six made best of a bad hand. But there's still questions surrounding Doral avoiding Ward and Kessler too. It leaves a bad taste.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It does. But you know what? That was the anticipation of doing a Super Six, that we weren't able to have. You weren't able to foresee something that for a two-year span. I think Showtime has got it right this time. You do it kind of fast. And even doing it kind of fast with the bantamweight, we saw that one guy got ill, which was Adebeko, and it pushed it back. I mean, you got to remember, you got six different personalities, six different fighters that have managers and publicists and promoters. There's nothing's going to be a smooth road through there. You know what I mean? And boxing fans, real hardcore boxing fans, we're not that easy to scare off. You know what I mean? I mean, the sport's been around for over 100 years, guys. It's not going anywhere. You know, I always tell the MMA guys, don't believe the hype.
It'd be interesting. It is kind of bizarre that, you know, there's, you know, Mikkel Kessler's fighting.
Yeah.
It's like, didn't you drop out because of an injury? You know, I don't understand how they kind of just got off, you know, him and Durrell. Although Durrell doesn't really have a fight scheduled.
I think he was trying to make a fight schedule, though. I think it was, what, back in March he was talking about hopefully getting back into the ring. And I don't know. I think what Durrell is doing is what he's trying to do is get a big fight. He's looking for a big fight. I don't think he's going to settle for just anybody. Unless something's made right now that I don't even know about. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not that connected to that particular camp. So I don't really know what's going on with him. You know, the Haymans are really talking about it. You know, the most stuff I've gotten out of them about their fighters is the Paul Williams thing. You know, that they're going to take this tune-up with Lara. They said tune-up and then Sergio Martinez. Lara is not exactly a tune-up, and we'll have Ronnie Shields on in the next couple weeks to talk about that fight. That's actually a really dangerous fight. But, you know, it really does look to me like
You know,
Martinez,
I think
the, and Williams 3 is probably going to happen because where else does Martinez go for a big fight? I mean, it's turning into their annual November showdown. I'd be willing to bet that it does happen again. December.
You know what's funny is that last time we had Sergio Martinez on, and he had talked about particular fights that he was hoping to get and, you know, hopefully get down in the summertime. And we asked him, if none of those come about, do we look at another Paul Williams 3? And he said it, you know, with his very calm voice. If all else fails, then he can always go back to Paul Williams. Hey, let's talk about the heavyweights. This past Friday on ESPN, we had a chance to see Tony Thompson and Chris the Nightmare Ariella in the ring. You know, Chris fighting, 2 weeks prior to that fight there on Friday night in Reno, blaming it on Reno. But Thompson looking just aggressive. I don't know what happened, Maurice Harris, man. He just didn't, you know, it just didn't seem like it was his night. He just didn't let his hands go. I think a lot of fans were rooting for Maurice Harris was Mo, who's been on the show a few times and who we rooted for. He was just overwhelmed. I don't think he was expecting Thompson to be so overwhelmed.
Yeah, you know, it was a strange fight. You know, I heard that he felt like he got hit in the back of the head and never quite recovered, but I didn't really see that. You know, what I saw was a guy that, you know, it was one of the things that he talked about was that he put on 20 pounds of weight heading into the fight. And when I heard him say that, I was like, that's just not a good plan to me. You know, his strength coming into that fight was being able to move, was having speed. And he kind of took that away from himself by adding 20 pounds. And he looked really hubbed in the fight. His upper body looked huge, but he looked like underwater. He looked really slow trying to move around the ring. And
was trying to figure out what he wanted to do. You know what I mean? A little bit with Maurice.
Yeah.
I mean, he just looked like, you know, it's hard to explain. I was watching that fight and I'm like, man, is there something wrong with this guy? You know, I mean, he didn't throw anything. I don't remember really recalling anything significant that landed against Tony the Tiger Thompson. Thompson was able to get off on and throw anything that he felt and realized, you know, there's not going to be any danger coming my way at all. I think he was even a little surprised how easy it was against Maurice Harris.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with Mo, it was just, you know, you look back to when he came back, several fights back, you know, like in 2010. And if you look at the weights, he was dropping a lot of weight, you know, 10 pounds, 20 pounds, and came down to, I think, like 236 or something like that. And then for this fight, he decided to put on, I think it was in the 220s, and he decided to put on 20 pounds. And I didn't understand it. It was like, are you going to try to out-muscle Tony Thompson? You know, when your strength has always been, you're a smaller guy that started at middleweight, and you kind of maintain that speed as you got older and turned into a heavyweight. It just made no sense to me. And looking at the fight, it just seemed like he just, I don't know if he was mentally not up for the fight. He seemed all dialed in and ready to go. I think he just underestimated Thompson a bit, and he got caught, and that was that, you know. And that's always been the thing with him, is that in the biggest fights and against top-tier competition, you know, when he gets caught, he doesn't recover, and he just didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it looked to me really that he left all the experience and all the skills that he's been able to gather through his years in boxing. I believe at the age of 15 he started, or younger.
16.
16 years old, was left in the dressing room. It never made its way to the ring, you know. Tony the Tiger Thompson not taking anything away from him, because he obviously showed up with his skills, didn't leave anything in the dressing room, and was able to overwhelm and use a lot of his strengths over Maurice Harris. Chris the Nightmare, like always, even when he was big Chris, almost up to 300 pounds, he's never been unentertaining. He's always been entertaining. I've always liked the way Chris comes out and performs. I know the big criticism was, you know, him and his weight, which to me was just sometimes I don't know. I mean, I could see the commitment that you see out of him now, but he was never a boring guy. But he does look sharp. He does look fast, and he does look determined. Being in Reno, he was able to get his guy out of there in 7 rounds. There is some talk, and I'm hoping that this happens because Tony the Tiger Thompson has called out Chris the Nightmare, not just once, but twice, even at his press conference off of a win that Chris had was successful on before the Adamic fight. He was saying, yo, when are you going to fight me? And, you know, Chris had a big smile and was like, in due time. Well, I think that due time is here. If not, I think Goose and Tudor and Thompson's may be looking at it. Well, we got two heavyweights right now. One is on his trouble comeback. The other one just got a title for Maurice Harris. We either play it out and make this a bigger fight than what it is, or we allow Thompson to get another shot at one of the Kaliskos. Bigger money. I'd like to see him and Tony fight for that. You know, I like to see exactly where they're going to go with it. I think Tony the Thompson right now is an altered high in his career after what he did to Maurice Harris, and seeing where Chris is at in his career. What I say is don't shelve Chris. Don't make him go back and say, I worked all this. I lost all of this to now be sitting back and waiting in the back of the line. I say take advantage of what he's doing now. What do you think, Gabriel?
Well, you know, what it looks like now, because this is part of the IBF, you know, tournament, the little box off for who gets a shot at Vladimir Klitschko or whoever ends up with that IBF belt. So it's looking like it's going to be Tony Thompson versus Eddie Chambers. I like them both, but, you know, the two guys that have already lost that title shot are fighting for another title shot. But, you know, they could end up fighting David Haye if he decides to stick around. Probably not if those are his mandatories. But what I'm hearing now, the little whispers here and there about it, is that there may be a triple header on July 9th. That's the Paul Williams, Lara, and Rico Ramos versus Shimoda fight card on HBO. That might end up being a triple header with Chris Areola filling out that third spot, which instantly makes that a better card.
Right.
It was already, you know, a pretty decent card. But now, you know, having an action heavyweight on there, that really jumps it up a notch for people on the East Coast. I think we'll see with Chris is probably more of a step up. One name that was thrown around was maybe like a Michael Grant type, somebody that's kind of bigger that can give rounds. But I think that's not even enough of a step up. It's kind of hard in the heavyweight division because – you know, they're either guys that are Tony Thompson and Eddie Chambers who are fighting for a shot at the title. Why would they fight Chris Areola? Or, you know, there are guys like, you know, Tomasz Adamek's already taken up. The Klitschko's already taken up. Povetkin and Vesla Chagayev are going to fight each other. Then you got, like, Denis Boytsev or, some of the
who's
other guys.
Who's not
going
to come down to the date?
Yeah, I mean, these guys aren't going to come over, you know.
Right.
Dmytrenko, I think, is fighting someone else. Where did you really go, you know? Does he fight Juan Carlos Gomez, you know, Cedric Boswell, you know? Ljakovic, I believe, is fighting Dmytrenko. Robert Hellenius. Those guys aren't going to come over. So it's going to be – I'm curious to see where Areola goes because, you know, maybe a Sam Peter fight, even though he was stopped in his last fight, he was very competitive early on.
Or David Tua, who's still active, who's still out there fighting. I mean
– you know, that's not a bad fight.
It's not
a
bad
fight
at all. At all.
Yeah.
I think it would be a very exciting fight. I mean, you know, if you come to think of this, if – a lot of people are saying that heavyweights are not that exciting. They, you know, they're not watchable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You put back David Haye, David Tua back in the mix with Chris the Nightmare. It's fireworks right there. You know, I mean, not even fireworks. You're going to see volcano. You're going to see lava. You're going to see a whole lot of stuff, you know. And I like that fight. You know, I think that it's not going to be an easy fight for Chris to knock him out. And vice versa, we're going to see – you know, Chris's chin put in the works with that fight because Chris has been known to have a really good, really good chin. But David Tua, man, I mean, this guy punches with his whole iron on his back.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some things. You know, I thought that Chris, somebody just texted me, and David Tua was even on South Park. didn't catch it. The thing with Chris, you know, I think this fight was really good for him, just because they were working on spacing, they were working on pace, and particularly on working, you know, breaking an opponent down, starting to the body, working your way up to the head, and not being so much of a headhunter. And Chris was kind of a headhunter early on in the fight, but then later on he started to find room for his left hook to the body, and that really started to set things up for him. And I had a sense that this would go about 6-7 rounds, and it did, you know. And I felt that they really accomplished all their goals. You know, Chris looked much better. That right hand, he still pushes it. The bad habit that Ronnie Shields seemed to take care of kind of has come back, where he kind of comes over his front foot a little bit too much when he throws it.
He's, you know, he's done that from the beginning.
It went away briefly with Shields, you know, right. That one fight. And then it just came right back. And he also kind of is open for a counter left hook when he throws that left uppercut. But still, I think there's a lot going on with Chris that is good, and that he's staying active and he's staying, you know, just fighting all the time and staying in the gym. I think that speaks volumes, you know, to his commitment to his career and his commitment just to himself, you know, as a fighter, that he wants to do this, that he loves this. And he, I don't know about you, but I'm getting the sense that fans are not back on the bandwagon so much, but that he's buying back some of the faith that they lost in him, you know, in the Manny Cazada fight, the way he showed up for the Adamic fight.
Right.
These last few fights, they're not great opponents, but the performances speak for themselves, and his body speaks for itself. He's clearly taking care of himself. And, you know, I expect them not to drop any more weight, to just kind of stay in the mid-230s, which I think they're really happy with. He looks great at that weight. And, you know, maybe he'll never win a title. Who knows? But he'll certainly always be a guy that's right there, that's a contender. And, you know, the way things are going, who knows what happens when the Klitschkos retire, or if David Haye gets a belt and he retires. You know, then you're going to have
Here's
a vacant
a good
belt floating out there.
Here's a good name that Riverside Ryder just tweeted us. How about Belew, the big Russian guy, Mr. Bigfoot himself? I mean, that's a pretty big guy there that Chris can really put himself to works in. And, I mean, you look at that guy, big. David Haye was able to outmaneuver him and pot shot and do what he needed to do. That's why he got his title belt there. But Chris could really make a measurement on a big guy and tee off of a big guy who doesn't have a very big punch.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting fight. You know, I'm not sure. You know, what do you do with Chris? Does he jump right back into the top 10? Does he do more of a top 20 guy?
I think we lose that guy. I think you're
you know?
Absolutely right. I think we end up losing him if you kind of drag him along. That's what I was talking about, shelving him. You know, and I think you end up losing the fans with him by doing that. And what I mean by that is that you end up losing him where he gets bored, and he'll end up just kind of trailing back to what he was doing before, blowing up to, you know, 250 and 260 and 270, whatever he was. I say I think the problem is that no matter what you do with them, you got to do it right away, and you got to do it now. And I think Goose and Tudor kind of sees that, you know, and that's why they had him fight back to back. And now you're seeing him be possibly the third name on that July card under Paul Williams. I say just put him out there and see what he got left. I mean, he's still a very young fighter, like he even mentioned himself. You know, he needed the motivation. I say he's got the motivation, but you can't wait for him to lose it. He's just one of those kind of guys, is he could lose it at any moment, at any time, and go back to his old ways. You just got to take advantage with it and gamble with it, because my take is this, and Henry, I know you listen to the show, you'll probably give me shit after. No, he won't. Henry's actually a really good guy, man. He's a very understanding head trainer. I think that's why he's so successful where he's at right now. But I think when he wins a title, you're going to see probably him kind of go back to what he was doing before. I'm hoping not. I'm hoping that I'm wrong. You know?
I don't know. You know, I think he really lost. I think he really understood in losses what exactly he was doing wrong, and that time is of the essence now. He doesn't really have any time to blow off anymore. He really needs to stay focused. He needs to stay in shape. And I think more than anything, he understands he needs to be active. And he's a guy that, you know, he even said, like, after the Aguilera fight, I'm going to take Monday off, and then I'm going to be back Tuesday. And instead, he found himself Monday right back at the gym and was like, screw it, I need to get to work. And that Tuesday, they began sparring again. I think he's just found a zest for training again and for being
a boxer.
You got to keep
him up. Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to keep him active. If you treat him like an HBO fighter where he just fights twice a year, I really think that's the wrong thing. I mean, they can get him back on HBO for this next fight, say he wins and does it fast, then and it doesn't take a lot of damage. You bring him either back on HBO fast or you pick up another ESPN date and you keep him working. I mean, yeah, it's not the same paycheck, but the bottom line is that it'll all pay off in the end. You know,
absolutely.
I think that's exactly what they need to do with him. Just keep him fighting.
Yep. Definitely got to keep him fighting. Keep him busy. Keep him out there, you know, especially just to make sure that he's on the right track and he continues to do exactly what he's been doing and keeping the fans satisfied. Not even just the fans, but Henry Ramirez, who's loving it. He doesn't have to chase him down or lock him into a hotel room.
Yeah.
Walter Estrada versus Tyrese Hendricks is going to be on Friday night fights. Very interesting fight, junior welterweight. It's going to go eight rounds of action. You know, some fight fans feeling that it's a step up for Estrada getting in with Hendricks, our fight junkie, who's making his prediction. He says Hendricks in two rounds, a TKO. I don't know. What do you think there, Gabe?
You know, it's not a fight that I've spent a lot of time with. You know, Estrada's, I mean, you know, he's a journeyman. You know, he's got, what, 14 losses. He's 35 years old. He's not the biggest guy on the planet. He's something of a trial horse. I haven't seen much of Hendricks, though. You know, I haven't really been able to track him down and really find out a hell of a lot about him. He doesn't have a lot of names on his roster. I mean, probably the biggest name is Hank Lundy. And he lost that fight by decision, and he didn't win any rounds, you know. So we'll see. You know, he's also 30 years old. It's two southpaws, which would be interesting, seeing which guy adjusts to that style. I kind of tend to think that Estrada will be the one to adjust to it, just because, you know, he's more of the veteran guy. He's got more rounds under his belt. I think it's kind of a toss-up fight, you know. I'd probably, you know, have to lean towards Hendricks just because Estrada seems to me to be a guy that's on the other end of things. You know, he dropped the decision to Vicente Escobedo. You know, he was able to beat Nate Campbell, but, I mean, you know, Nate Campbell's kind of older. But any of the other bigger names that he's fought, you know, from Gamboa, who blew him out in one round, to, you know, Marvin Quintero, Luis Ramos Jr., those guys all beat him. And
well, this is the thing, too. But this is the thing I like. Since 2010, we're looking back on 2010, he got knocked out. But it was kind of early on in 2010. After that, he's had over, 10 fights, and they've all been the distance. You know, you've seen him in last with Vicente Escobedo. It was unanimous decision at Fantasy Springs Casino. Nate Campbell was able to get a split decision. Jose Reyes, split decision. And so on and so on. Luis Ramos Jr. was able to beat him with four rounds, unanimous decision. He is a guy, though, that if you give him time, you give him time in the ring and allow him to work, he's going to be around for a minute. Hendricks is just going to have to execute his game quick. You know what I mean? He can't wait. He can't allow the older guy, the veteran guy, to catch his rhythm. We talked about this a little earlier with Glenn Johnson and Carl Froch. You can't allow them to get comfortable with their pace. You got to be right on top of them, and you got to do what you have to do. You know, Hendricks coming off of a TKO, you know, on the second round, and before that he KO'd the guy in the first round. He lost to Henry Lundy, unanimous decision. It wasn't the most entertaining fight at all. And then he lost again right after that to Barnett in eight rounds. So to me, there's room there for Walter Estrada to possibly upset the younger guy and take this from him, who's coming out of Gainesville, Georgia, Tyrese Hendricks. So it is an interesting fight. I think it's a good fight. The fight junkie normally gets his predictions pretty well. you know, he gets him pretty good and all that. So he says second round. I'm going to say, you know, I think I'll agree with him. I think it's going to be early on, and Hendricks just got to jump on him. If he doesn't, I can see Walter just kind of making the tables turn and himself creeping back into the fight where he could possibly earn himself a decision.
I just don't see how Tyrese Hendricks knocks Walter Estrada out early. He's only got 9 knockouts, you know, in 23 fights. He's 30 years old. He is
very true.
He is.
Yeah.
You know,
very true.
And he's kind of moving up in weight. You know, I'm not sure exactly what weight this fight's contracted at, somewhere probably like lightweight. But I just don't see him as a guy that's really going to do much in terms of knocking out. I think it's going to be more of a war of attrition kind of fight. Both guys letting their hands go. And who's ever able to break the other one down to the body and kind of establish themselves, that's who's going to win. You know, I'm going to go with the younger guy on that one, though, and say Tyrese Hendricks. The fight above that, though, is a little more interesting to me.
Right.
Udell Johnson taking on Jose Miguel Torres. You know, I'm not sure if it's necessarily a 50-50 fight. You know, Torres is a kind of guy that, you know, he's mainly fought, I think he's fought only one time out of Colombia, or two times, rather. You know, he's fought Panama, Argentina, and mainly Colombia. One time in Venezuela after that, and then one time in Florida against Joe Green. And he went the decision. So he's a guy that, you know, he goes rounds. You know, he's never been knocked out in his 4 losses.
Right.
But he's got 19 knockouts and 21 wins. So, you know, we'll see if that power is real. Guys from Colombia tend to hit pretty hard, and we always ask, I wonder if this is real, and then they land on somebody and they really hurt him. But Johnson, on the other end, is, you know, he came over with Guillermo Rigondo.
Right,
and,
Cuban 2004 Olympic silver medalist, yep.
Yeah, so he's a guy with a lot of, you know, a lot of upside to him. And it's interesting that, you know, everybody looks at Gamboa, and they look over at Rigondeaux as really the class Cubans right now. And Johnson was kind of more the unpolished guy when he came to the wild card with Rigondeaux. but you look at him, and he seems to have some decent power. He likes to mix it up a bit. He's not your classic kind of stinky Cuban fighter. And he's got a nice win over, you know, Richard Gutierrez, who, you know, was definitely well past it in his last fight back in March. But still, it was a quality win. I'm really curious. I mean, this is a big step up in class for him because, you know, most of the guys that he's fought have had losing records. I mean, you got a guy with like 8-43 on his roster. I guess only, you know, I'm surprised Louisiana was the one that sanctioned that fight. But then after that, it's like, you know, 4-6-3. Gutierrez was a big step up at 26-5-1. But, you know, he's a guy that had lost his last fight and
right.
had lost like 3 out of his last 5. In Torres, you know, yeah, he's dropped a couple decisions in his last 3. But he also had a knockout in his last fight. Granted, it wasn't against a top-level guy. It was a 3-10 guy. But to me, he's a guy that's going to be dangerous and that he's going to be there to win. He's going to be pushing the pace a bit. He's going to be a pressure guy that lands, and we'll see if that power is real. This is, to me, this is good matchmaking. This is a good fight that
really good fight.
Show exactly, yeah, where Johnson is, because he's only 10-0 with 7 knockouts. He's very early on in his pro career, and to be fighting a guy with 25 fights, this says a lot about what they think of him, that this is time for him to step up. So I don't think he's going to pull a Arislandi Lara and kind of stink out the joint. I think he wins the fight. He gets tested a little bit, and I think he looks good doing it.
I think so, too. You know, Johnson is a guy that has a great pedigree. He's a guy that shows that he can box. He's a guy that pretty much he's going to – Torres is going to have to do a lot, in my opinion, to catch up with him. I'm going to go with Johnson, also with the Fight Junkies prediction. I say unanimous decision for Johnson. I think that you're going to see Torres just trying to land a whole lot and not get it there. The Colombian's going to be kind of overwhelmed with the movement. I just see Johnson just taking this, not getting a knockout over him. I don't see that. I think he's going to play it smart, and I think he's going to bring what he brings to the table already, and that's his experience in the amateurs. You know, really, really quick, I want to say I want to make a shout out to Janeto Hernandez, who's really ill, is doing terribly, terrible with his cancer right now. And also seeing that Espinosa Boxing has tweeted that Antonio Orozco is dedicating this fight tonight. So hopefully Gennaro fights through this one because he's been fighting with his cancer. We've had him on the show, and when we had him on, he was doing really, really well. But now it seems like that it's catching up to him. He's a guy that's brought us a lot of fights. If you don't know who Gennaro Hernandez is, he fought Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather when they were coming up, and he had the title at the time. He's sparred Shane Mosley. He's an overall legend. He's done some commentating for boxing. He's a big part of our history for boxing. So, Gennaro, brother, please come through. We wish you the best.
Yeah, man, it's just a sad story. You know, cancer, you know, touched both of our lives, and it's just a sad situation. And I wish him all the best. You know, I saw him at the fights a while back over in Maywood, and he just didn't look like himself. You know, and he seemed to be in great spirits though, and you could tell that's, you know, being a champion, being a fighter, there's just something in them that not everybody has. And his fighting spirit, you know, seems to be still going strong. So hopefully, he's able to pull through this.
Absolutely. I want to see him pull through this. You know, it's sad to see this happen. But all right, let's move on to some fights here. Let's talk about what's going to be happening. Same thing on Friday night. You're going to see in Telefuturo Solo Boxeo Fantasy Springs Casino, Indio, California. Hey, you know what? I know that we normally, even some fight fans that hit me up and said, hey, Dave, leave it in the ring. You guys are always giving out tickets for that casino there. Have you guys given out any tickets? You know what, sadly to say, I didn't ask for them. I apologize. I dropped the ball on that one. We've sent plenty of people out to fights. Yep, I have to be fired from getting any more tickets. But I tell you what, we'll drop the ball the next one. We'll make sure we send out some fight fans. I'll be trying to get some tickets that are a little bit close. Because some fight fans said, hey, are you getting any tickets here in Northern California? And I'm like, we don't have a whole lot. But when we do have fights out over here in Northern California, I'll talk to the promoters or who's working the ticket booth and see if we can get some tickets so we can send out the fight fans out there to enjoy themselves from leaving the ring and whoever the tickets are coming from. But anyways, Leo Santa Cruz is going to be going in with Jose Lopez. Leo Santa Cruz, 15-1 with 7 KOs, facing a guy with 39-9-2 and 32 KOs. Bantamweight, 8 rounds of action. Fight Junkie has Santa Cruz via 8th-round unanimous decision. This is a, you know, interesting fight. You know, I'll let Gable go first on this first take about that. On the undercard, you have Luis Ramos Jr., who's going to be facing Francisco Lorenzo, and that's in junior welterweight, 8 rounds of action as well. What do you got there, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm going Leo Santa Cruz. I mean, this is, you know, this is good matchmaking again for him. He's taking on a guy in Jose Lopez who's very experienced. You know, Santa Cruz has only got 16 fights, rather, to, you know, Lopez's 50 fights. But he's also 39 years old out of Puerto Rico. He's lost his last two fights. He lost to Marvin Sonsona and Cesar Cida. Two undefeated prospects, former title holders in Sona. To me, you know, I think this will just be a nice step up for Leo Santa Cruz. He's like the kind of forgotten Santa Cruz brother, the youngest. He's only 22. I expect him to do well in this. He's a TV fighter, which means he's going to be action. He might get hit, but he's going to pressure. He's going to throw a lot of leather. He's going to come forward and attack constantly, you know, true to the Santa Cruz name. So I expect him to pull out the win, and I think it's going to be an exciting show.
I think so, too. You know, the thing, too, is that Jose Lopez here, he's only fought once in 2010. Before that, he fought Marvin Sonsona in 2009, and then he had lost that fight. These last two fights that he's had, he has lost it. So it's almost mostly like it's a comeback fight for him, but it's a comeback fight as an opponent. Not really looking for him to do anything. It's more for Leo Santa Cruz to patent it up and continue doing his work, still being a prospect. So I think it's a good move. Good matchmaking is, like you said. So we should see him be successful, get a unanimous decision over Jose Lopez, and hopefully see him back in the Solo Boxeo banner. Luis Ramos Jr., Francisco Lorenzo, who you got? Who you picking on that fight?
I would say
I like Luis in this fight.
Yeah, I'm gonna probably go with Luis in this fight. It, again, it's another you know, instead of this show, you know, which is an enjoyable series. I know you've been out there to Fantasy Springs, and I've gone out there. I'm not going out this Friday, but to me, this is all about, you know, building these prospects and getting them to fight in these locations in Southern Cal often, so that they kind of build their fan base. Louis Ramos to me is a guy that is really a class fighter. You know, he's got all the skills. Doesn't have a hell of a lot of power, but still, you know, he's a good boxer. He's a good TV fighter because he doesn't have a lot of power. You can kind of get through his guard a little bit, or through, you know, through that onslaught that of his jab and his right hand as you're coming in and get to him, and that's going to force him to fight. And you know, I'm not sure if he's ever going to be a world title holder because of that lack of power. He's got 8 knockouts, 18 wins, but he's certainly going to be an exciting TV fighter, and that sometimes is all that really matters. Lorenzo's going to be tough, though. You know, this is the guy that gave Eric Morales some trouble. He went the distance with him last December.
Right.
He also went the distance with Jorge Linares. You know, he was in those fights. I was ringside for his fight with Humberto Soto, where he got won by disqualification, which was absolutely ridiculous. But then, you know, he turned right around the next later on that year and went the distance with Soto. So this is probably going to be a distance fight. Knowing the way Lorenzo fights, this is going to be Ramos's test to see if he can deal with a guy that fouls a lot, a guy that's really rough and awkward, hard to hit because of that style, but that will headbutt, will do all kinds of veteran tricks. This is going to be a big learning
experience for Ramos. You're absolutely right about that. This is the fight, though, where Luis Ramos is going to have to use his height. Being 5'8", he's facing a guy, Francisco Lorenzo, who's only 5'5.5". This is a fight he's going to have to use his boxing, his distance. He's going to have to make sure he registers the measuring of him, you know, not allowing him to get in too close to use those rough tactics. So he's going to have almost say, you would have to say, he's going to have to fight the perfect fight to not let Francisco kind of get in his head, to get him out of his game plan, because Francisco Lorenzo is definitely going to try to do that. He's going to try to get in his head. He's going to try to make the younger guy, fresher guy, not fight his game so that he can score points on the way up. You know, Luis Ramos Jr., I like him. I think he's a hell of a prospect, and I see him just having a rough time with Francisco Lorenzo. I think this is the fight that most of us should tune in to watch, because you're going to see what Luis Ramos is made out to be. And Francisco Lorenzo is the perfect opponent, in my opinion, right now, in his position of Luis Ramos' career, where you can see what Luis Ramos is at, where he's going to go, and how is he going to be. You're going to see some adjustments later in the round. You're going to see the mistakes in the beginning of the round for Ramos. But I'm going to go with a unanimous decision with Luis Ramos.
Yeah, I don't see him knocking out Lorenzo. I'd be pretty shocked if he did. Also on the card, though, is our friend of the show, Randy Caballero.
Randy Caballero, that's right.
Yeah, that's he's taking on Sergio Cristobal. I don't think you need a crystal ball to see who's going to win this fight. You know, Randy's on a hot streak right now. He's 10-0, 6 knockouts, and you know, Cristobal is, he's got 4 fights. You know, 1 loss, which was his debut. You know, it was back in 2009, and he's been active. He did win this year, just last month, last April. April 15th, he won a unanimous decision out in St. Louis, Missouri. It's kind of a fellow prospect type guy. He's not the biggest guy on the planet, you know, but at least he's in Randy's weight class, which is the most important thing. Randy's finally fighting in his weight class, and I expect him to pull out the win. I'm curious to see if Randy will get the stoppage, though. This guy does seem to go rounds and win pretty handily in his fights. You know, they're generally, you know, kind of shutout type wins, or he loses one round only. So this is a good test for Randy, you know.
Absolutely.
All these guys, you know, Randy's managed by Cameron Duncan, and he tends to be very hands-on in terms of matchmaking his fighters. And I always think of him as a guy that's as smart as anyone in the game, if not smarter than most, in terms of matchmaking, how to build a fighter. He's, you know, so many guys that he has, Brandon Rios, Nonito Donaire, Tim Bradley. These are all guys that he represents, and Kelly Pavlik's another one, and you can see that he really knows how to kind of guide guys to the title, but also guiding them into becoming a better fighter than they normally would be. Or, you know, in the matchmaking, he hides where their deficiencies are and is able to build them that way. So I think this is another set of good matchmaking for Cameron and his fighter. And I'm going to go on a limb and go Randy by stoppage. You know, he's looking better and better each fight. And he's, you know, he's on a two-fight knockout streak this year. So he did start out the year with a decision. But as they've stepped up the competition, you know, it was kind of interesting that, you know, Hugo Ramos, he was like 3-7-2, and you'd think, oh, easy knockout. And Randy went the decision with him. Same thing with the guy before that, Manuel Ortega, was like 1-3. But then when Randy fought a 7-2 and a 9-4, boom, he had two knockouts in a row. So I expect that streak to keep going.
I think so, too. You know, the thing I like about Randy Caballero is that he's still really young. I mean, you look at him and you think, has he even broke puberty yet? I mean, he has no facial hair yet. Really young kid, very clean cut, but he hits. Boy, does that kid know how to hit. He's got some power behind those gloves. And you want to look at him and you want to make sure that he's being maneuvered. You want to see that he's maneuvered very cautiously, but at the same time, yeah, I couldn't get that word out for some reason. I got stuck on that word. You know, when you got one word, you just can't seem to get it out. And at the same time, I'm overreading, which I shouldn't do when we're on the show. I'm overreading what people are tweeting us and texting us and emailing us. But going back with Randy really quick before I forget. And just a reminder, too, I still got to throw the Randy Caballero interview that we did over there at the World Series of Boxing in the ring that you did with him here, Gabriel. I got to throw that up today. Because he was able to do some really good tellings of what happened with that fight that he didn't get a TKO. And you saw the maturity and you saw that this kid really is a student of the game. He's watching what he does. He goes back and he re-reviews it. And he understands that there's going to be criticism. But he understands as well, within that criticism, he's going to be able to adjust to it and correct the mistakes that he has out there. He understands his manager's job, his father's job, and he understands his role as well. Which is a good telling for him. You know, for a kid that young, you want a kid that's that young that's not going to be overzealous and say, hey, I want to do this, I want to do that. He's like, look, I'm waiting patiently. I'm going to be built up. When I'm built up and I'm ready, I'll be there. And those are the kind of guys that you sit there and you go, okay, great understanding of the sport, fun to watch, but it's been put in sometimes. And remember, some of these fights too, Gabe, I think we have to make a note out there for listeners to hear, if they're barely hearing about Randy Caballero and they go and check on BoxRate, his record, that some of those fighters were 20 pounds heavier than him.
Yeah.
Because a fighter fell out, you know?
That's really the thing, you know, is that he was fighting out of his weight class. And you know, when you do that, it doesn't matter how skilled you are, you know. Because Randy's not the tallest guy on the planet. He hasn't grown into himself as a man yet. He's still just a kid. And so it was,
absolutely,
you know, fighting these guys who were like a foot taller than him, literally, it just seemed ridiculous watching it. It was like, you know, these guys, you can't even really, when they get into a clinch, they're kind of moving him around. And really what really wasn't able to deal with these guys in a physical sense. And he's not quite, you know, he's not a master boxer. His style is to kind of go in there and slug it out with you and then get the guy out of there and hopefully, like, overwhelm him with volume, set up his power shots and go home. And he wasn't able to do that with these guys because, you know, he really couldn't reach their head. And he was kind of, you know, he's still a prospect, so he wasn't able to go to the body and then work himself up to the head yet. He hadn't really figured out how to do that. And I thought there were great fights for him in only that sense, is that he was presented with problems that he had to overcome, and then he did it.
Yeah, and he was able to overcome them, and now we're able to see him again back in Fantasy Springs where they're keeping him. And I think that's a great idea to keep him in his hometown where he's from around there and continue having fans coming out there to support him so he builds his fan base out there in Indio, California, at the desert and all the other little towns that are around that. So it's a great, great move for Golden Boy as well as Cameron Duncan. I wish I was going to be out there this Friday. I know our publicist Red is going to be out there rooting him on, and as well we're going to be at the Woodlands for that fight there to cover and other fights. But hey, we did talk about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and we made our I think I made my pick. Did you make your pick, Gabe? Did I even make my pick?
No, I don't think you did.
I'm gonna go with Julio. I'm gonna go with Julio. I say he's gonna be able to stop Sebastian I just think the body shots are going to take its toll. I think he's going to be able to cut him off with 10 KOs underneath his belt. There's not a whole lot of feathers on the, behind those gloves. I don't think he has enough to keep Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. off of him, and I think Sebastian was picked just for that. You know, I know there's a lot of talks of possibly Julio getting shot with Margarito or Cotto, so I think Top Rank are doing the smart thing and making sure they're putting him in with somebody where they can continue getting wins and confidence build up for Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I think Sebastian's going to outbox him early, but eventually you're going to see him creep up slow, you know, just like that TLC song, you know, Creep.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, it's obvious. I mean, this was, I even talked about this several months back, was that, you know, Canelo would go for the 154 belt, it maneuvered Chavez into this belt, and here we are, you know, and I think there's a reason why this fight was made. I mean, there's a few reasons. I mean, one, I think it's a winnable fight for Chavez Jr. The guy's got 10 knockouts. There's no reason to believe that he's going to just, you know, pull a Martinez and knock, you know, Chavez Jr., you know, flat out cold. He's also fighting out of his home country. He's not really used to doing that. He's mainly fought in Germany. You know, he's a pure boxer, but he's not really able to really handle the kind of pressure style with a guy that's going to come forward and really look to make a fight out of this instead of a boxing match. I think just sheer size, Zivic, his frame is smaller. He's a little bit shorter, you know, not negligibly so, but just looking at him, he just seems like a smaller man than young Chavez. And, you know, watching Chavez spar with Vaness and Rashad Holloway, the thing that really struck me was that, you know, one, for all his flaws, the guy takes a good shot. That's what Vana said, was like, he's relentless. You know, no matter what you hit him with, he just keeps coming forward and he'll keep throwing punches. I don't think that Zivic has the kind of power to keep him honest and keep him off. He's going to have to box a perfect fight for all 12 rounds, keep turning Chavez. And watching Zivic in the gym, you know, his footwork's okay. And watching his fights, it's not bad. But it's not, he doesn't glide around the ring like Sergio Martinez, where you're just not going to be able to find this guy. He's going to be able to hit you fast and then get out of the way. He's kind of an average guy. That's why we really haven't heard of him until he became a mandatory for Martinez. And then, you know, and that's really the other reason why this fight was made, in my opinion. Bob Arum seemed to disagree, but I think he would. I expected him to. Is that Pacquiao, you know, and Top Rank, they moved over to Showtime. You know, and granted, it wasn't a full-time deal.
Right.
You know, the next fight against Marquez may land, you know, at HBO, may land at Showtime. But I think in some ways, because, you know, Martinez was not allowed to fight Zivic on their air, HBO said he was an unacceptable opponent. But then here comes, you know, the opportunity for Chavez Jr. to fight for a title. And rather than lose that fight, too, to Showtime and not be in the Chavez Jr. business, which I think is going to be a lucrative business, despite how limited I think he is as a fighter. I think in some ways this is HBO's way of saying, please come back and bring Manny with you, and we'll do this fight. We'll do whatever it takes, and we'll call
right.
it a middleweight title fight. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the HBO announcers talk about that belt, because, you know, flat out, it's just not a real belt. You know, it was when Chavez,
I don't think they
when Martinez owned it. But they'll probably talk about the ring belt, which is also
right.
a mythical belt as well. But you know, it still doesn't. When it all said and done, you know, Martinez is a champ. The guy that has this belt is probably more of a number one contender than anything. What will be interesting afterwards is where they go, because the mandatory to this belt is Marco Antonio Rubio. But because this
who's
fight
fighting
is man-
too,
right?
I believe he's fighting either Saturday night or Friday night, but it's untelevised. But he's keeping himself busy. You know,
right.
after that David Lemieux fight, he's definitely keeping himself.
But I'm curious to see, because he's got that. Yeah, I mean, he's fighting a guy that's 11-3 down in
right.
Mexico. But it'll be interesting to see where everything lands here. Because if Chavez Jr. wins, he's most likely going to fight Miguel Cotto, probably in the fall. That's what everybody seemed to talk about. That's what Freddie talked about. Freddie flat out said, you know, it's better to fight him than Martinez. Martinez will always be there. And when the risk-reward, meaning when he gets a little bit older and able to take, we can fight him if he's still around as a middleweight. Whereas Miguel Cotto is about done. That's what Freddie said. It's about done now. It's a perfect time. Timing is everything. It's very important in life. And so they were flat out. They're probably going to go after Cotto, which, you know, it would be the optional defense, which he'll be entitled to. The mandatory will be due. It's due to Zivic, but that doesn't roll over for Chavez Jr. In terms of the date. So, you know, I don't know what the WBC will set for when Marco Antonio Rubio is due for the champion to face, or for the
right.
title holder in this case. So it'll be interesting. You know, maybe Martinez tries to make a bid for Chavez Jr. If he can't get it, then maybe he takes on Marco Antonio Rubio. You know, it's all kind of up in the air. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I know
right.
Cotto's going to be there on Saturday night, but so is Sergio Martinez.
So is Margarito, I heard. I heard Margarito's
yeah.
going to be there as well, you know. So
yeah.
it is interesting to see how it all pans out, you know. Hopefully, well, we know it's not going to pan out what we want, how we would want it to be panned out, but at least, you know, give a little. Just give a little. That's all we're asking for, you know, from all the players among that little circle there. On that same night,
yeah.
you're going to see Mikey Garcia. He's going to get back in the ring against late replacement Rafael Guzman. Guzman is a guy that's he's had four wins on his winning streak since 2010. He only lost last time he had lost was in 2009, I believe. I would have to double check on that. I think it is 2009 the last time he lost. No, it wasn't 2010.
Yeah.
Last
yeah,
time he lost
was Mark.
Yeah, it was the first round TKO. Miguel Garcia is a guy that I think a lot of people have said that really doesn't want to be a fighter, which I don't really understand. I think we got to get him on the show to talk to him about that. But his last great performance was against Matt Remillard at the Boardwalk Hall, Atlantic City in New Jersey. And what a performance. He was able to chop down Matt Remillard. Remillard was really trying to get himself into that fight, but could never get himself because Mikey Garcia was just overwhelming and throwing just perfect razor-sharp combinations. And now he's getting those razor combinations to be ready set on Rafael Gomez. Gomez is going to be, he's going to have his hands full with Mikey Garcia. How much he does against Mikey Garcia, I don't see that. I mean, he's got 20 KOs. He is a veteran. The last guy he was in, he had a TKO in three rounds against Jorge Ibarra. Then he had another, he's had three since his comeback. You know,
yeah, but they're all been kind of easy guys.
Yeah,
you know?
And these guys are no Mikey Garcia. Mikey Garcia seems
yeah.
to me he's just starting to really get in that zone, and he's starting to really look like the champion that a lot of us are hoping that he's going to become. But take nothing away from Rafael Gomez being a late replacement. Sometimes can mess up a fighter when they're training for a particular person. But I don't think Marky Garcia really does train for a particular fighter. You see his style. He's a guy that really's got good reflexes, and he uses a lot of combinations. He sets it up. He sets it up very well. He's got great ring generalship. You know, he doesn't really capitalize a whole lot. Doesn't have an overall, you know, a good point about him. He does everything really, really, really good. You know, so if anything, Rafael Guzman is just going to have to figure him out in the ring, which is always tough to do, is to figure a guy out in the ring. Especially a guy against like Miguel, you know, Mikey Garcia. You don't want to figure out a guy that has 21 knockouts on his 25 resume. You know, you want to be able to kind of go in there, foresee some stuff, but you're not going to be able to foresee. Not with a young guy like that with Mikey. So I see Mikey stopping Rafael Guzman in the mid rounds. What do you got there, Gabe?
Yeah, I'm going Mikey Garcia. I mean, it just is a late replacement. The style really suits Garcia. Guy's going to come forward. He's going to be available to be counterpunched all night, which is what Mikey does, in my opinion, you know, very well. It's probably the best thing he does. He's a very methodical guy. You know, he's not the most exciting fighter in the world in terms of he's not going out there and just letting his hands go. He's almost like Trinidad in a sense that he kind of comes in early. I know people go, that's blasphemy, but he reminds me a lot of Tito in that he kind of slowly comes in, and that's my favorite fighter, so I'm allowed to make a comparison.
Right.
You know, he kind of comes in, but it's really his punching frame that really reminds me of him. He keeps the gloves right in front of him, right just above chin level, so that they're ready to be released very fast. He's very economical in the punches he lets go. He works with the body a lot more than Tito does, kind of sets things up. But he's the kind of guy that kind of goes a little faster as each round goes on. It takes him a while to kind of warm up. He takes a few shots, and then he kind of gets into the fight. And I just think, you know, Guzman's going to be in there, probably try to move a little more than he normally does early on to kind of offset some of the things that, you know, Garcia's a little bit slow of foot, but excellent in terms of pressure. But I expect it to be a mid-rounds knockout. I think that's why he was brought in. He's been stopped before, and I expect him to probably go out in this fight too. You know, I just think it's a matter of class is what it comes down to.
I actually think that he's a good opponent for Mikey Garcia. You know, he's a guy that hasn't been knocked out, like I said, since it was early 2010. I believe it was in March when he was TKO'd. You know, but after that, you look at his work in his resume and his record, he's a guy that's trailed himself back in. And you have to say he's got his two, you know, knockouts under his belt of recent, one late of 2010, one early of 2011, is that he's got a confidence build there. You know, and I think that's why he was picked for Mikey Garcia. It's just due because of the confidence build and because he's got his winning streak of four, you know, or five underneath his belt. So he's a perfect opponent that's not going to be afraid. He's not going to fold that quick, but he's also not going to fold from a shootout. And I think Mikey wants that. He needs that, you know, to continue his reign and to continue trying to get him. He has a title right now, you know, but to get him the bigger titles and the bigger fights. So perfect match for Mikey Garcia, but I'm going to go with your pick as well. You know, I say he stops his opponent in the mid rounds.
Yeah, I thought Beltran was going to be a hell of a fight, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, that was going to be a really good fight, a really nice test. But to me, this is just more stay busy. You know, it'll be good work, but I think it'll be more stay busy. Also on that card that we've got, Vanes Martirosyan taking on Saul Roman, which I think is going to be a fun fight. You know, Roman is a guy, he's got eight losses, but he's a really game fighter. He's a tough fighter.
And said it's not going to be televised, right? That fight's not being televised that night.
No. I'll be covering it from ringside, but it won't be. Actually, you know, it'll probably be on the Top Rank live stream.
You're right.
Yeah, and they're actually, I think, using a new service provider, so you'll actually be able to see it online.
Great.
Which would be a good thing, because, they've had some trouble with their streams, and I guess they fixed it now. But I really like this fight a lot. You know, I think it's a perfect fight for Rivanis to kind of prove he can deal with a pressure style, but also a guy that can move a little bit. It's certainly going to be there to win. You know, like I said, despite the losses, Saul Roman's a good opponent. He's a good, tough fighter. He's going to bring out the best in Bonas, who seems really hungry right now. He seems like he really wants to get some things done and make a statement.
Yep.
And I get the sense that it's not from anything he said, but just watching him spar, you know, with Junior on Junior's media day, and it was Bonas kind of getting the best of it. You know, there's a bit of a chip on the shoulder of him, you know, that he's, you know, he's 29-0 with 18 knockouts. He's got Olympic pedigree. He should be in title contention at some point. Granted, he's got that what everybody thought was kind of a loss to Kasim Uma under his belt, and he didn't look good against Joe Green in winning. It was kind of a sloppier fight. Even though he won every round, it was not that. Same thing with Chad Dawson. It wasn't that killer instinct. But, you know, I really think that he's going to look to make a statement and kind of steal the show a little bit on Saturday night. I expect him to really take it to Roman, really come forward a lot and mix it up, not give as much ground this time. And there's one thing I noticed with Chavez Jr., and I don't know if it was something they were working on or what, but he tends to give up the center of the ring a lot. He's a guy that kind of bounces around and still kind of has some amateur traits to him.
He's been doing that from the beginning of his career, too, though. I don't know.
Yeah, he's never really made that transition to pro.
Right.
Sitting down on your shots and really just kind of having a presence in the ring where I'm the boss, I'm going to take the center of the ring, and I'm not giving it up. Instead, he kind of moves around and goes to the ropes. He kind of bounces around a lot, and I don't really understand it. He's a big guy for the weight class. He's kind of an imposing physical fighter, particularly in the gym. But then when he gets under the lights, something changes. I'd like to see him turn the corner in this fight.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Really quick, this is actually a fight I'm very excited about. Johnny Tapia, mi vida loca, is going to be getting back in the ring with Mauricio Pedrosuana. I'm just kidding. I'm not excited about this fight. But they are fighting. They are fighting at the Hard Rock, Albuquerque, New Mexico. So if you're over there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, go out there and root for your hometown hero, Johnny Tapia, who's going to be making an appearance. Really strictly, it's for money, nothing more. We've had him on the show, and he's told us why. Should get him back on. Just talk to him, because Johnny's so fun to talk to on the radio. Very alive, very electric. He's a great guy to speak to. He definitely has a Mi Vida Loca life. I've read his book, and you sit there and you read his book, and if you think you had a shitty life, you sit there and you read his stuff, and you go, damn, how did this guy make it through anything?
Yeah, he's still alive. I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of, I think even his reflection in the mirror asks him the same question. Like, dude, seriously, how are you still even here?
Yeah, seriously.
There's no fight schedules we should read out tonight, because I think we've pretty much threw all the fights out there.
There's one more on the Showtime broadcast. Mikkel Kessler taking on Mehdi Bouadla. I know I'm just butchering that name, but they'll also be on the, you know,
Bouadla, right?
Bouadla,
yeah.
If you say so.
Whatever.
It's been tight. you know, it's another guy that hasn't been stopped. He's kind of a rough and tumble guy. He's only got 10 knockouts and 22 wins, and so you got to figure at age 29, there's a reason why Mikkel Kessler is coming back against him, and he's also got home court advantage. He's going to be, you know, there at in Copenhagen, in Park in Copenhagen. You know, I'm taking Kessler. If he's still got something left, and I think he does, he should pull out a decision in this. But
I think so, too.
It's a rust remover, you know,
right,
more than anything.
Mikkel Kessler is not – I think late in his career now, he's more content of boxing, not really trying to go for that kill. He's more of a boxer-puncher. The fight junkie got him for fourth round TKO. I don't see that. I see him just taking it to a boring unanimous decision. I don't see a whole lot of fireworks, excitement. I think the other guy is being brought in just as an opponent, just to get Kessler back on his feet and to see where his eye is really at. You know,
yeah, and then they'll probably match him with Boutte and go from there, you know.
Right.
While they wait for the winner of the Super Six. They still say, you know, looking in terms of venue, I know they're looking at Vegas. I think New York's off the table now for the Super Six final because Madison Square Garden is going to be under construction during that period of time. I still think they should take this fight to Canada. I think it would do very well. You could match up with Lucien Boutte.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Dan Goosen was not into it when I mentioned it to him. He said, nah, not really interested. But to me, if you want to maximize ticket sales and really take this thing to the roof and go to a neutral site where you can satisfy all those things of selling out the show, building your audience in front of a new audience, you know, the Canadian fans will come out for that, and also kind of moving down the line or looking down the road towards a Boutte versus winner of the Super Six, Montreal makes all the sense in the world to me. It would also be, really a question. I think this is what Dan's point was. Who's going to headline it? Is Boutte really going to be the co-feature against Kessler for the winner of the Super Six? Is he going to do that? Probably not. And the winner of the Super Six or the Super Six finals shouldn't be the co-feature to something else. So I can understand the point of view, but in terms of venue, I just think, why not take it up there, you know?
Right.
This makes a lot of sense to me.
It sells out. Plenty of people are going to be into it. And it is a venue to talk about. I mean, they do know how to really get the place, put the roof on fire in Canada when it comes to their fights there.
Dudes throwing fire, people on, you know, women on
they
poles.
They got strippers on a pole out there. I mean, they got works. I mean,
every time I see a fight there on TV, I'm like, why didn't I go to that? Like, what the hell?
It's the airfare. That's why I don't go to them. It's kind of far.
Yeah. I'm gonna get walking.
And I mean,
actually, I think if you're in the Florida area, I think there is one more fight. O'Neill Bell versus Richard Hall is happening at the Seminole Hard Rock Casino in Hollywood, Florida.
Really?
Which is, yeah, you know, it's kind of their names or whatever, but
Richard
Boswell is also on that card, 34-1 versus Kirsten Manswell, 20-2. Daniel Atah is supposed to be on that card. You know, I mean, it could be a nice club show, you know, night at the fights if you don't want to stay home and watch, you know, the
Chavez make history?
Fight or, yeah, Chavez Jr., you know, or as I like to call him, Segundo Carnera, you know, make some history, then, you know, go check that out and get your DVR ready.
Yep, Richard Hall and O'Neill Bell. Well, now that's, you know what? That would have been two names to talk about. How many years ago?
Yeah.
How many years ago?
In 2001, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's had his, well, you know, I think he's most notable for stopping Rico Hoy back in 2004. And whatever happened to Mr. K.O.? He was the guy that stopped K.O., you know?
O'Neill Bell won the Supernova, or Give Him Hell Bell, the name I prefer.
Right.
He won me some money back in 2006, so I'm never gonna trash the guy. He was actually, like, back when I actually still bet on fights, I did like a five or like seven fight, and him over Bell or him over Mormack was the clincher, and ended up winning me like close to $1,000 on like a $25 or $35 bet. So
those fights were great too, with O'Bell Mormack. That first fight was great fight.
Yeah, you know? He won me almost a grand. So you know, I'll always have some love in my wallet for Mr. O'Neill Bell.
Really?
So
I mean, you know, the thing though is that he hasn't fought since 2008, since losing to Thomas Adamick when he lost on the 8th round TKO. And now he's back in with Richard Hall, who's been pretty active for 2010. This is his first fight in 2011. So you know who's the opponent coming in this fight, O'Bell.
Yeah.
O'Neill Bell.
He kind of fell off. It was weird. He had those Mormack fights, and then he just kind of fell off really fast.
I think those fights took a lot out of him.
Dude, they were brutal. That first fight in particular was a brutal fight.
They really set the pace for the cruiserweights for that time. You know?
They did. You know, for a second there, everybody was like, wait a minute, the cruiserweights could be good. And then they just went back to being the cruiserweights, you know.
Exactly.
But
they did spark it up. I mean, even when he got in with Adamick, it was a great fight. They were going at it. And that's why I say that, you know, the Mormack and Bell, they really did start that pace. Even where you had a Cunningham going into the cruiserweight,
that's
right?
Right. Yeah, there was a little period there. Yeah.
Yep.
And David,
he was making
Hay,
a lot of
moves. You know, Macronelli there for a second was making some moves. It was actually, it was for a brief period of time, the cruiserweights were not bad, you know. And now
it was almost like a blink for three, four blinks of your eye. They were around for a minute. They were making it really exciting where you we were even talking about it, you know what I mean? But then all of a sudden it just kind of crept away.
Hopefully, BJ Flores will bring back that fire to the cruiserweights.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, he doesn't blow in the cruiserweight division.
Wow,
terrible, right terrible. There. That was a terrible joke. Anyways, if you want to send a question or final thoughts to us here at Leaving the Ring, you can at leavingring@gmail.com, or you can send your questions to Mark Ortega, who's our feature writer for Leaving the Ring, and he will cover that. I don't think he's did one for this week or last week. I don't know if he's doing one this week here. I won't find out until either tonight or tomorrow. You know, nobody listens to the boss. I'm just there. So, and we're still waiting. And people are asking about our Apple application for the thing. Hey, I'm waiting just like you guys. I'll find out today. I'll find a little bit more information about it. Why is it taking so long? We've been talking about it for about a month here, and I know everybody wants an application on their phone so they can listen to Leave It in the Ring and the guests that we have on. Once again, man, I got to say, have a great weekend. Please do not drink and drive. Enjoy the fights, whether you're there or at home. Be good and continue supporting the sport that we love. And like I've said numerous times, if you're listening to this show right now, that's because you're a real true hardcore boxing fan. You know, you're not over there just surfing just for the particulars of the sport, but you're saying, you know what, I want to hear everything. You know, it's not necessarily you're learning anything from the show, but you're just able to chop it up and pass the time, whether you're at work or at home or babysitting or just say, hey, I'm a fanatic. So that's why I tune in and listen. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Unless he's got some final thoughts and final words, it's a good night.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm going to be ringside there at the fights at the Staples Center. So if you guys, you know, are fans of the show or, you know, follow me on Matchboxing, please feel free to say hi. Feel free to buy me a beer. We can hang out and talk the fights.
Don't buy too many beers. Don't buy Gabriel too many beers. It gets really touchy-feely. When it
I do. It's terrible. It's really embarrassing for all involved. All right, then.
There you go. All right, brother. You have a good one. Everybody out there listening, hey, you guys have a good night, man. Always a joy talking on the show. Hey, thanks for Jesse Vargas for calling in, too, as well, and stirring some stuff up with Madonna. Madonna, you need to call us, too, brother. What's up with that? Don't be scared. take it easy.
Peace.